Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 31. I'm Dave, and I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. It's been a long week, though. First week back at school.
These crazy kids.
It's killing me.
Just teaching young minds, though, Stu. Possibly corrupting young minds. Who knows?
Definitely corrupting young minds.
Now, Stu, the news was... you might remember World Without Superman. It was almost World Without Dave as I was choking to death last night as I'm trying to go to sleep. It's my new reality, Stu.
I've heard these rumors. They're all over the internet.
As I'm falling asleep, I'm sort of choking as I'm falling asleep, and I was actually thinking, if I pass away in my sleep, what kind of eulogies would I get? Like, what kind of speech at work would I get? I was kind of fantasizing about it, and you do give yourself a kind of glowing reference.
We do at least one episode on The Signal.
Thank you, Stu. Dude, that's big of you.
Yeah.
Would you solo it, or would you just automatically bring that co-host right in? Off the bench.
I'd bring the co-host.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I'm barely in the ground.
There'd be another co-host.
For me, it should only be a moment of silence too, because I don't think I can do a full minute of silence in my actual life. So I would just do a moment's enough for me, Stu, you know what I mean? It's more of my spirit. Now, I heard, Stu, that you're breaking some fresh internet news.
So
what's happening?
We broke this week in Australia. Hugh Jackman
got a
phone call from the local radio team in Sydney here.
Okay.
It was his 49th birthday this week.
Is he only 49? Okay, cool.
49. Yeah. So they asked him what his plans were for his birthday, and he said he's actually going out to dinner with the one and only Ryan Reynolds.
I love it. I'm automatically thinking Deadpool.
Exactly. We're all automatically thinking Deadpool.
Yeah.
And the chances that there's going to be a little Hugh Jackman cameo, maybe?
Oh, cameo in the Deadpool 2 movie.
Oh, I'd love to see that, wouldn't you?
Oh, completely.
We got the mask in the first movie.
That's right, that's right.
It'd be great to see Hugh popping and doing a little cameo.
I'd love to see Hugh. I mean, my preference is obviously he'd be Wolverine in the movie, even if for a small bit. But also, Hugh Jackman could potentially do, like, a bit. Like, as Hugh Jackman in the
movie itself. Oh, yeah, you could totally do a bit.
Mm. Oh, that'd be great.
It'd be great. I mean, they're both in the same place at the same time. They're both in Atlanta right now.
I think the chances are that there'll be something. It might potentially be in the marketing, or it might be a before the movie or after the movie kind of scene, you know?
It could well be a little after credits scene.
Like, it's not going to be Hugh Jackman in the middle of Wolverine cutting up, or in the middle of Deadpool cutting up as Wolverine.
Oh, look, I'd love to see a little Hugh Jackman, like, fuck-off scene.
Yeah.
Like, remember...
Yes, yes.
His tiny little scene in First Class.
That's right, yeah, where they came up to him and harass him.
Yeah, in the bar.
That was good,
actually. He gets the one line.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that, perfect.
No,
perfect.
Yeah, that's interesting. Stu, shout out as well, on the topic of Wolverine, to King's Comics. You saw today, Stu, the Wolverine statue that I purchased?
I did see Dave's little gift
to himself. It's so good. It's a little gift to myself, to the one I love, Stu. I put underneath it, I inscribe it. It's just fantastic. Wolverine in the blue and gold costume, looking very much like, in my memory, from like sort of early 2000s, around that time when Fraction was writing X-Men and Brubaker.
Yeah.
There's an artist there, I think Greg Land. Like, that kind of art, it really is something special. And such good prices and great service at King's, too. I was in there, it was my first trip in there for a couple of months, and I really enjoyed chatting to the guys. And they were saying, actually, Stu, I quizzed them, because I like to get the pulse of the nation, you know me, I'm a man on the street. And kind of went in there, a bit undercover, and I sort of pitched them. I go, so what's the news, guys, like, on Wolverine? Like, the title, is Wolverine coming back in his proper title? And there's a bit of confusion at first when I asked the question, but one of the guys there reckons that they confirmed that at a recent retailer summit. They certainly confirmed that Charles Xavier is coming back, which I don't remember if we've covered on the show so far, but they confirmed in the summit that Charles Xavier is coming back to life.
Excellent.
And I think they hinted, obviously Wolverine is back in Marvel Legacy.
Yeah.
But I think they hinted that he would come back to a Wolverine title.
So we're actually going to have a Wolverine title back on the show.
Yeah. It's not solicited. It's not officially solicited, but they seem to indicate during the summit that was going to be happening.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, come on. If you've got Wolverine, proper Wolverine back in Marvel U, he needs a title, Stu.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's a massive character. What's the point otherwise? You know?
Yeah.
Like, really, honestly. Like, who wants really to read Old Man Logan in four different team books when it could be Wolverine?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, nobody, you know?
I mean, I don't understand why they haven't had a Wolverine title to cash in on the success of the Wolverine characters in all the movies. Yeah, like, Hugh Jackman's Wolverine has been the biggest character out of
definitely.
Those Fox
movies. Well, they haven't. They had a Wolverine title, but when he died, it finished and it went to All-New Wolverine, and then when Old Man Logan got brought in, they brought in the Old Man Logan title.
Yeah, but we've been running Old Man Logan for, what, like 3 years now? Yeah,
old man, I'm fucking over it. Like,
see, we haven't had a Wolverine title for years now.
No, not since he died, like 3 or 4 years ago, when Saul killed him, yeah. No, definitely, and I'll be brutally frank. I think since Jason Aaron left Wolverine title, like, it suffered. Like, I don't think the replacement was up to scratch, up to par. I think Jason Aaron set the bar very high on his Wolverine run, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's interesting. Stu, I've got a question for you. I basically, this week, have been watching a lot of one of my favourite shows, Vice Principals, starring Danny McBride. I don't know if you've seen this one on HBO.
I haven't. I do quite like Danny McBride.
Oh, I love Danny McBride. And this Vice Principals, I mean, you work in the school system. Like, he's basically a vice principal and his mate's also a vice principal. And it's really funny. It's very dark. Michelle hates it. I love it. But I had the misfortune, Stu, of catching, I was checking out some Danny McBride clips. Seth Meyers, dude, where are you on Late Night Host? Because this guy, he's struggling as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he hasn't made it to Australia at all.
Okay, because
the Australian audience does not respond to him.
I was watching him interview Danny McBride. He seemed to be personality free. Like, I watched it and I was like, is this a really... I know Seth Meyers, like, I've seen Matt Fraction was on Seth Meyers. He's a comic book fan. So, you know, guys, I know he's a comic book fan. Don't bother writing the show telling me to love him because he loves comics. He loves comics, great. He's a talk show host. He had Bendis on. He had Matt Fraction on. I watched him interview Danny McBride. I would say it was one of the most painfully awkward interviewing styles. And even when he was talking to the audience, it honestly seemed like he was nervous just presenting Stu, doing his... I'm talking like when he's talking to the audience to introduce the guy before the guy's even out there. I felt like I was drinking disinfectant watching him, man. Like, it was honestly some of the most painful... I'm a Letterman guy from... Back in the 90s, I watched Letterman all the time. I wasn't a Jay Leno guy. I like Jimmy Fallon. I like Kimmel. Them I like. I can watch them, and they've got personality. There's a bit of warmth.
Where are you on Colbert taking over from
Letterman? I cannot stand it. It's so political. I get it. He's popular. I get the politics of the currency today. For me, it's changed the channel.
Yeah.
Is he talented? Yes. Is it my style of comedy? I don't need, dude, I don't need, at the end of the day, I don't need the really heavy political stuff. I know that's the currency of the times, but in my comedy, I get it. You don't like Trump. I'm sort of like, I got it. Like, you know what? You know, I get like, on the 20th Trump joke in like 10 minutes, I'm like, we've got it. Like, can we do some other stuff? That's kind of right. You know, but... That's me. I know Colbert is like... I almost think it's a shame that following Letterman, they got Colbert because it's such a different style. It's so political. And I'm like, oh, does any... I mean, there's an audience for it, I guess, but it's not my style. But Jimmy Kimmel, I like a lot. I'll often watch Jimmy Kimmel. And I like Fallon, like, as well. Like, for what he is, entertainment value, you know?
Okay.
But Seth Meyers, dude, I thought was terrible. I was watching and I was like... That's painful to watch. Interesting, though. But anyway, so, Stu, the other thing I was going to mention is we've got a lot of trailers dropping this week.
A lot of big trailers.
And kind of this is going to be the meat of the show this week, Stu. And, I mean, it started out shortly after last show. The first one that dropped was Justice League.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, kids, I mean, are we doing spoilers for trailers? Not really. Go watch the fucking trailer and come back. You know, like...
I mean, minor spoilers ahead, potentially. It's a trailer.
It's a trailer for a movie that's coming out in, like, a couple of months.
Yeah, if you're avoiding trailers, yeah.
If you're avoiding trailers, what are you doing? Sitting at home, just in the dark. You know, like I'm surprised you listened to The Signal because we love discussing trailers and spoilers.
Oh, we love spoilers.
So, I mean, you're dicing with death already. Now, Stu... I'm going to break the trailer down as far as my memory goes. Like, so, love the first scene with Lois Lane, Amy Adams looking out, Superman's in the wheat field, turns around.
Yeah, so we get a bit of a flashback.
Thought that was a nice scene.
And we see that they've just become engaged.
Yeah, but it's in her imagination.
No, it's in the past.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because then you see the scene where she's throwing the dirt on the coffin and she's wearing the ring.
Oh, okay. Right, I see.
So that was a flashback.
Oh, I thought it was her imagination.
No.
Like in a dream, or a dream is what I actually thought it was.
No, no, no. Oh, I mean, it was a dream, but it was
but she's dreaming off the past.
It was a memory.
That gets confusing for me. It's a flashback, but it's in a fucking dream. Okay. All right. Anyway, regardless, she threw the ring into the coffin at the end.
No, she throws the... She's got a handful of dirt.
I thought she threw the ring in as well.
No, she's wearing the ring.
Okay.
Did you watch this trailer, Dave?
I did. I was confused when I watched it. Okay.
Did you fall asleep?
No, I watched it. I got confused. Okay, now, that makes... I thought she's throwing the ring in. I was like, is that normal? Okay, I guess, if you're very upset, but you also want to date again. got it. Okay, so she's got the ring. She's still in grief, which is appropriate.
So they are engaged, which we didn't see in any other... movie, we didn't hear anything about that. This is the first time we've seen that.
Got a question for you, Stu. In Batman Superman, she's in it. Does she have the ring? Is she engaged there? And does she, is there a ring on her finger in Batman Superman is my point.
I don't remember seeing a ring on the finger in that.
Well, movie. I call continuity glitch because he dies fighting Doomsday. So that's what I'm saying. If... Stu, I mean, I think I've stumbled onto the correct answer. Okay, he died.
Look, there might well be, and we just... Because it's not something I was looking for when I was watching Batman v Superman.
Huh. I think maybe it's time someone go
and
go review the tapes.
Go back and go and have a look.
Can the intern get on that for me, please? Like, because I can't be bothered doing it. Like,
is there a period of time where she was safe on the farm and he went back there?
No, there's no... If you remember, it all happens on the night. Like, the night where she gets kidnapped by whoever, Doomsday... And Luther as well? Does he kidnap her? Or Luther kidnaps her?
Luther kidnaps her.
Okay. In that scene, Superman, you know, without spoiling the movie, comes and they all fight, yada, yada, yada. He ends up dying. She needs to have a ring on the finger in that scene if they're engaged when he's
Well, unless
dead.
She's just not wearing the ring.
Seems strange that someone's proposed, you've accepted, and you're not wearing the ring. And, but then after they die, you're like, oh, you know what? I was going to marry him. You know what I mean? Like, it's a yes or no situation. If someone proposes to you, we all know. If they say, I've got to think about it, that's a no. Okay? But if she says yes, then she's wearing the ring. I'm telling you, it's a continuity glitch, Stu. I think I've stumbled upon it. You know?
I don't know. I feel like she's just... Like she just didn't wear it that day or something like that.
Terrible. Okay.
Who knows?
Well, okay, so far we've made it through the opening fucking moment of the trailer.
Sure, maybe, yeah.
So, regardless, that moves on. Then the trailer, from memory, Stu... shifts into kind of more like it's Batman Soup, it's Batman Wonder Woman talking. We see some really cool visuals again when Batman's like, she's like an invasion. He's like, something darker. And then it's like the parademons coming down, looks like fighting the Amazonians.
So we see more of the flashback, the original invasion.
Yeah, I dug that.
Well, where the motherbuckers were involved. Yeah.
Yeah. An invasion. Something darker.
So we see the original invasion.
I love that scene. That was actually... That started to make me think, oh, yeah. And
my problem is they're hitting you over the head with the dark side reference. Like,
but you saw the symbol. You saw the Omega symbol or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they are smacking you over the head with dark side right now.
Well, why not?
It's darker. Really darker? Dark side, maybe?
But isn't it hilarious that something darker and then all the press is like, it's not darker, it's fun. Remember? Like, it's not darker, it's so fun. Ugh. It's so much fun. I'm like, fuck. I don't care.
To be honest,
after
that first scene in the trailer, the rest felt like every other...
Yeah, well, you know where I felt the weakness came? Not in that scene with the parademons. It's the next extended scene when everyone has to have their moment to shine in that never-ending fucking battle scene.
Yeah, so you get a little bit of Cyborg fighting for the first time.
Yeah.
Where he basically just picks up and throws Aquaman.
Mm.
Like, great, good job.
Cyborg can fly.
Yeah, Cyborg can fly. That's about all he can do. He can fly and he can talk to machines.
And I was going
to
say, and interface with every fucking machine ever. Like, that's going to be his big thing. He's a Transformer as far as I'm concerned. There's going to be a lot of...
He's not even a Transformer. He can't even transform.
But there's going to be a lot of Transformers noise. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I hope not.
Like, Cyborg. Every single time it's like there's a phone, it's like, why don't we just wheel in Cyborg?
And I don't know, is it part of the character where he has zero personality? Is that a trait?
From what I've read of Cyborg, he's pretty much a generic guy, dude. Like, he's pretty boring. Like, I wouldn't say Cyborg. Cyborg in some of the Teen Titans cartoons has more personality. They play him up for laughs a bit more. But in the comics, what I've read, it's not like anything that's going to blow you away. You know?
Yeah, because watching this, like when he picks up and catches it, he says some quippy line like, the fight's not done.
Yeah, I know.
But he just says it's so boring, he's just bland.
But also, we're getting a lot of like Jason Momoa in that fight scene. Like, so the rest of it felt like a sizzle reel for that, because
you're getting a lot of Momoa and you're getting a lot of Ezra Miller.
Like, oh yeah, that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah, which is now the third time we've heard that in a different setting.
Yeah, I know.
Is that all he does?
I think he's the surfer bro, dude.
Oh.
That is definitely going to be Momoa in this film. I think that can become real tired if he's like all that all the way through Aquaman.
Yeah.
I think you can get away with that in this Justice League because that's his role. And I like Jason Momoa a lot. So, I mean, I say this as a Jason Momoa, you know, fan. But if he's like that all the way through Aquaman, I'm going to start tuning out because I don't care about Aquaman.
Honestly, like, this trailer did the opposite to me. It actually made this movie less appealing.
No, I wasn't, like, pumped. I was like, okay, it's a trailer. It's decent enough.
It felt like more of the same.
Yeah.
What they did hit down on, they doubled down on the things that were annoying.
Well, you'll be disappointed because this was Whedon's big chance to put his stamp on it and get the product out there.
This was a chance to get some vision of Steppenwolf.
Yeah. Who was the being? I've actually got some questions. Who was the being who came down? Is that Steppenwolf whose skin changed when he came down onto the field
and had the big axe?
Yeah,
yeah, that's Steppenwolf.
Okay, cool. All right.
So in the comics, Steppenwolf is Darkseid's uncle.
His uncle. Okay.
But in this canon, this universe,
he's a molecular tenant or something.
No, he's his. They've switched them around.
Right.
So Darkseid is now his uncle.
Makes more sense.
So they've just reversed that uncle-nephew title.
I remember,
so now Steppenwolf is the younger character.
Okay. I remember from comics back in like the 90s, I think it's Desaad is Darkseid's torturer. Because there's some JLA where Darkseid captures them at times and he's got this real twisted torturer. And you got like Granny Goddess and stuff as well. There's some really full-on stuff in The Last Gods, man. I was a bit disappointed though when I saw that. I was like, oh, that just looks like a human. Pretty humanoid.
It looked like a weird mix of CGI with a human face.
I thought Steppenwolf, they confirmed, was like some big horned creature from like Batman Superman, the I mean, cut bits.
But yeah, the creature had massive horns.
Did he? Okay, so, all right. Okay, I'll have to watch it again. I just thought it looked like a human who just changed skin colorization when he came down. Did he have horns as well that I missed?
Yeah, like 9/10 of his body was horn. It was massively. How did you not get...
Horn? Like, you mean horns out of his head?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll watch it again. Okay,
you got to watch it once, Dave.
I watched it like fucking before you came over. But I got a bit distracted actually. Now I think I say that, but then I'm like, actually, I'm not 100% sure I made it all the way through. One thing I did like, wrapping up this trailer review, which feels like it's gone longer than the trailer, was I liked the last scene, the comedy beat scene with Flash, Wonder Woman, and Batman. I really liked that scene.
Yeah, where the bat signal comes off. Yes. Yeah.
He's like, that was like, yes. I feel like, I don't want the whole film to be just quips, but I liked that scene because it showcased the characters and how it's working. You've got to get the trio working.
Yeah, that little bit felt a little bit more Whedon.
Yeah, and a bit fun. And like, that's the kind of fun I want, where everyone's kind of got their role. There's a bit of quipping. That's classic Whedon.
That's classic Whedon.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get to play these characters off each other.
I'm not without hope for this movie, but I do hope that it's not just like Batman, Superman 2.
I
mean, look,
I still have hope. I'm still going to see it. I still think it will be the best DC movie to date.
Hope so.
Other than possibly Wonder Woman. I think Wonder Woman's going to be up there still.
Yeah.
But this trailer didn't do anything for me.
No, I was underwhelmed, if I can be brutally honest.
It knocked me down from like a 9 out of 10 to maybe an 8 out of 10. Like,
yeah, if you remember, we were pumped last week, remember?
I was, yeah.
Because we knew it was coming. And when I watched this, I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, 80% of this trailer felt like it was just the same as the last trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that same giant battle towards the end of the movie with
there was parademons no new information.
Like, they're destroying that city, they're flying.
I hope they're saving up a lot of good stuff, dude. I hope they're saving up a lot of good stuff. You know?
Yeah.
Do you think we'll see, Stu, because if you think about it, it's coming pretty soon. Do you think we're going to see Superman in the silver suit? You know, the silver and black suit?
I mean, they've had a bunch of spoilers with merchandise.
I know, they've had the hat and stuff, which I'm going to buy, actually.
With the black suit.
The fucking hat.
It would make sense, yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine me rolling around in that hat? It's going to happen. So look, Stu, okay, look, my thing for the trailer, I'm like, I thought it was good. My mind was definitely not blown. Stu, turning to something that did blow my mind though, right after Justice League came out, like a day after Last Jedi trailer came out,
Yeah, classic Disney. As soon as Warner gets a trailer out,
they just one
within
them.
A day or two.
Yeah.
Marvel or Star Wars have come out with another trailer.
And to me, this trailer really hit a sweet spot, I've got to say.
This trailer was brilliant.
I loved it, Stu.
This has everything you want in a trailer.
I feel like I'm getting jazzed because I'm thinking like the story's really going to start moving now.
Yeah.
You know, like you see Luke there. A lot of speculation Luke's going to go to the dark side. I guess there's been a lot of speculation Rey will go to the dark side. There's speculation Luke will. I don't think Luke's going to go to the dark side.
Well, the premise for Luke's character in this trilogy is that he went away from the light side.
Right.
He wanted a more balanced approach to the Force.
Okay.
So he's not going to go dark side, but he's not going to be on the light side either.
Right.
He's balancing somewhere in the middle. He believes in a more balanced Force.
I was going to say this. It wouldn't surprise me that he does Force Lightning in the movie. I wouldn't stun me if I saw Luke do some Force Lightning.
It'd be cool, but I can't see it happening.
Why?
I don't know. It just... That seems very dark side.
I'm just saying, I think because it'll have that genuine moment of shock and awe for the audience.
It totally will. I mean, we've got to hear Luke speak in this trailer. That was shocking.
That was good, yeah. Mark Hamill, got to say, pretty cheesy actor. Watched it. Guess what, kids? Mark Hamill is never the world's greatest actor. He's a great voice actor. Watched him in the trailer. I hear the Joker when he does it now. I've got to say, I mean, shoot me down, internet. Stu, where are you? I don't think he's the world's greatest actor.
He's not the world's greatest actor, but I didn't find it cheesy.
I liked it. I dig him. I'm making these comments from a place of love. I like Mark Hamill. I don't know if you saw him in The Flash. Oh, my God, it was terrible. Did you see it? He played the trickster. Michelle and I watched it, and she said, "Who the fuck is this?" And I said, "You'll be surprised." I go, "It's Mark Hamill." And she said, "Get him off screen." I don't know, dude. Like, it's got to be tough. He's been frozen in ice for, like, 30 years, his career. And, you know, he's done great voice work. I like the look of him with the beard. He looks a little unhinged. He's been on that island a long time. Like, I'm fascinated by the story. I'm actually fascinated. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I thought the way this trailer was cut together, like, it confuses you. You think at the end, like, when she's like, "I want someone to show me the way," and what's his name? Kylo Ren holds out the hand.
Kylo Ren holds out the hand.
Now, there's absolutely no...
No. The backgrounds are completely different. Yeah. There is no continuity between those two scenes.
Well, you tricked because I was, though, in the initial viewing.
The first time you watched it, I was like, "Hang on, what just happened? That doesn't..."
Dave was like, "Oh, my God." And then I was like, "Slow down, Dave. You've been fooled before."
And then you watch it again. You're like, okay. Yeah.
That's some people like me, though, who really were like... The emotional reaction is what counts, you know?
Yeah,
on absolutely. The first viewing of the trailer.
Absolutely.
Because the mums and dads out there and, like, the little kids, they're not going to be like, "Oh, the backgrounds." You know, like, there's the emotional punch. Such great stuff in this. Like, the new walkers with the paws... Did you see that? You know, instead of having the old classic walkers, they've now got kind of gorilla paws.
Well, they've got the AT-AT walkers.
Yeah.
But they've now got a bunch of body armor over them.
And they've got paws, dude, so that they can kind of more claw around through rough terrain and stuff, if you look at it in the trailer.
A little bit, yeah.
Dude, believe you me, I didn't break this. I was listening to Collider and they mentioned it, and then when I watched the trailer again this morning, I saw it. So... Didn't exactly pick it up first time. I love the walkers, man. Walkers are one of my favorite things. When I was a kid, dude, I used to play. We had on. You won't remember this, dude. We had the Atari. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, you had Atari, and we had the Empire Strikes Back game. I put in like hundreds of hours.
That's so good.
It was the snow speeder. The snow speeder.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I was like a king of that game, and I think I was part of the Rebel Alliance. Yes. like, I remember days of like, what do you call it, like, not leave, holidays, just playing it. My mother would be like, "Seriously, still?" And I'm like, I've got HOT to defend. But there was no winning. It was one of those games, there was no end winning point. It was like the old style game, you play until you die, kids. like, HOT is doomed, okay? Vader reaches the control center. Like a snow speeder. Don't ask questions. Stu, okay, where are you on Chewie and the Porgs? I'm starting to love them.
I kind of love the Porg. The Porgs are going to be this year's big toy. That's going to flood the
shops. I'm thinking of getting Michelle a Porg. She saw it, and I was like, "Please let my girlfriend say that's cute." And she did. I was like, good. Yeah. You know, because
that's the green light for you to get a few porks.
Well, yeah, I'm not one of those guys. I just think they're adorable. Like, yeah. They do Chewie do the voice, and then it does its voice, and I'm like, this is just movie magic. That's what I mean. As a trailer, it had multiple points that hit. You know, and if you think about the trailer that came out of Force Awakens, which had Chewie at home.
Yeah,
that was huge.
Yeah, that was a massive moment.
That was massive.
Right?
That's very hard to replicate that. But instead, they went for smaller emotional payoffs, but a lot of them.
Well, you do have one scene that's focusing just on Leia, just standing silently, and you're like, that's a pretty big emotional hit.
And it looked potentially, the way they cut together, they were making it seem like Kylo Ren was going to blow up her ship. Now, again, I think that's being some very creative editing there, potentially. I've watched it a few times, and it's just a really good trailer. Yeah. Like, if you're on the fence about Last Jedi, go watch this movie, you know?
Oh, this is...
Whereas, if you're on the fence about Justice League, I don't think the last trailer would convince you. If you were like, I don't like DC, you know, one of those DC whiners.
No, if you were on the fence, maybe I'll see it, maybe I won't, and you watch that Justice League trailer, you'd be now leaning towards, I'm not going to bother.
Yeah, which is a shame.
I'll catch it on DVD, or I'll stream it later.
But why can't Warner, such a good studio, put together as good a trailer as what Disney did for Star Wars? Like, well, what's the difference?
I feel to me like the difference is that Joss Whedon just had to put this trailer together.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of footage that he didn't shoot.
Yeah, I get it. Because you've got to remember, 70% of the movie is probably still Zack Snyder's movie.
Exactly.
You know?
So he's had to make this trailer,
which
is not in his style.
Which is why we've got that long battle at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's not his style.
Because I've got to say, I don't think anything needs a long battle scene in a trailer. Like,
really, no, exactly. Save it for the movie.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Because all you're doing is spoiling the movie.
Yeah.
And probably, guess what, kids? Some of that won't be in the movie.
Yeah, you're spoiling a couple of big moments.
You know what I mean? How many times are we going to watch fucking, I was going to say Khal Drogo, but the Aquaman jump down the building, like all the different variations on that, you know, and being thrown in the air, and oh yeah! Like, it's like,
yeah.
Oh my God, I feel like a two-year-old could have written that.
Whereas Last Jedi, complete opposite.
Oh, yeah.
If you're on the fence, this trailer makes you want to see it.
I'm calling on that.
You get some more of Luke's backstory. Yeah. You get him. He was like legitimately worried when Rey was cracking that.
Yeah, what was she doing, Stu? Like, she can cause like earthquakes with the Force.
I don't know what she was trying to do. Whether she was trying to lift a boulder or something using the Force.
But then she split the Earth.
But yeah, the Earth just cracked.
And am I right in saying when he's like, I've only seen one other person with that kind of power, and it didn't worry me enough then, but in a more whiny voice, Kylo Ren, that person, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess.
Because then you see the flashback to when he's like buried under a building.
I went, with Darth Vader? I was like, Darth Vader? Yoda? And then I was like, oh, I get it. Kylo Ren, who killed, like, yeah.
Okay, yeah, okay. He wasn't worried enough, so.
Yeah, because he trained him in his little... Did all the little underlings that he trained, did Kylo kill them or did he convert them to Knights of Ren? The movies haven't told us
this. I don't think they've confirmed it.
Right, but he probably killed some and then took some.
Yeah, I imagine it's a bit of both.
Like a sort of school of rebellion. What a little prick Kylo Ren is. He's really going to be... They're going to have to do a lot if they want to redeem him.
I don't think it'll take much. I think.
Can you forgive him? You watched him kill Han Solo. Can you forgive him?
Yeah.
On screen, you watched it. It's not Anakin Skywalker killing children off screen, which is what Anakin Skywalker did. He killed children off screen. Okay. Kylo Ren killed Han Solo.
He killed children barely off screen.
I know. I'm not forgiving him, but I'm saying that was their way of like, oh yeah, but it just happened off screen. But Kylo Ren killed Han Solo on screen. He put a lightsaber through him from memory, if I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
Now, that's almost unforgivable to me.
We've had 30 years of Han out in the media just saying, I wanted to die in the last movie. I don't want to do...
Oh, no, I get that.
I saw that, I was like, I'm not surprised.
I just mean it was a sad end for a character, though.
Not really. Like, I wasn't that upset by this.
I would have preferred Hando have been taken down in, like, a gun battle with bounty hunters. Or he shoots one of them and they shoot him, that kind of style. That was more my Han Solo death I always pictured.
So I'm glad it had stakes to it. Like, I'm glad it was something big.
Yeah, it worked. I'm not critical of it. I know Harrison wanted to go, clearly. Otherwise, he'd
look,
still
I went into that movie expecting him to not make it through this movie.
I expected it was going to be a victory lap, which it was.
I half expected Leia not to make it through that movie as well.
Yeah, unfortunately in real life.
The character made it through, and unfortunately,
she didn't make it
through. Carrie Fisher didn't make it.
When you take cocaine, ecstasy, and marijuana, and you're pushing mid-60s, you know, it's going to happen, Stu. She's burning a candle at both ends.
She's more than mid-60s, though, surely, isn't she?
Well, I don't know. But she
Harrison Ford's 75.
Okay, maybe, well, okay, she's 70, Stu. She's taking, she had cocaine, ecstasy, and marijuana in her system. Okay, she's on a plane flight. She had a huge heart attack. We didn't lose Mother Teresa. We didn't lose a modern-day saint. We lost a good actress who played a very, very vital role.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just... Sorry, it's the news. Signal of Doom news. I just love it that we gloss over that. Like, oh, how did she die? She had a lot of drugs in her system, kids. That's what she had. Okay.
I don't understand this, Dave. You just... Dave picks weird things to focus on. I didn't spend a good 3 minutes explaining what this weird thing is he's chosen to focus on. Before it was Ataris and saving Hoff, and he's like, yeah.
Sometimes I just love to
break... I want to save Hoff on an
Atari. Sometimes I just love to break the news cycle down.
That's going
to
be a good, like, 5 minutes.
You know what I mean? If I die in my fucking...
We mentioned Carrie Fisher, and he's like,
death, all right. Death's on my mind. If I die in my sleep choking to death in my bed, we've lost a saint. Okay, we lost a hero. I want World Without Dave, the comic book with all this, you know, the heroes like around my coffin sort of thing, and me draped in the flag. That kind of, that's the send off I want, Stu.
I can totally do that. I will draw it for you.
Thank you. Because
it will be drawn really, really badly and in crayon, but we will have it.
Okay, that's all right. Okay, good.
And then I'll go on a random little rant for like three
do
or four
Do a random
minutes.
Rant and do a signal advertisement in it as well.
We'll do a signal
advertisement. I want to go out advertising.
Yeah. I know. It's all about chasing the dollar, Dave. Yeah.
Jew is dead, Dave. Can I consistent on message?
Yeah. We'll
anyway, that. Have we covered the Last Jedi trailer?
Who knows at this point, Dave?
I loved it. I thought it was an awesome trailer. Despite my comments in Carrie Fisher, I really am affected whenever I see Princess Leia on screen. Like, I love Princess Leia. I really do. She's a great character. Do you think that they will... I'm going to put a question to you, Stu, because we'll have the answers to this. Do you think they'll kill her off in the film? You know, considering that she died in real life, they'll explode her in a starship or something.
Potentially. I think they're going to have to be careful with how they do it. We've said this before on The Signal.
Have we? Yeah.
You can't just kill her in a battle scene.
Can't you? Why not?
It's just, you're not treating that character with enough respect.
But then how are you going to do it? Because she can't film it unless they use CGI. Like, or she could, well, I'm going away now to a part of the Star Wars universe no one's ever seen. Bye! It's either that or she dies, Stu.
There are ways of killing off that character respectfully.
You know how I would do it?
And I feel like whatever you're about to say is not that way. I don't know what you're going to say, Dave.
Okay.
But whatever it is, okay. I haven't heard respectful There's, as
the No, your th- this is very respectful, my friend.
Oh, shit.
Okay, get ready for this. There's a planet that I'm calling New Alderaan. And guess what happens to you?
I'm already out.
Guess what happens?
I'm already not interested.
Guess what happens to you, Alderaan? New Alderaan. Guess what happens to you, Alderaan?
Is it anything like what happened to old Alderaan?
Yes, it's exactly the same, actually. It's except exactly this the time same. She's on it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And so in her way, okay, here's the pitch. Princess Leia, haunted by guilt as the sole survivor of her world. She's fought the Empire for like fucking 30 years. Check your timelines, kids. And her lover, Han Solo, tragically passed away. Her son has turned upon her. She performs some reunion scene with Luke. She does something heroic. And then guess what, Stu? She visits New Alderaan on a mission. And sadly, Starkiller Base or New Death Star or whatever the new instrument of mass destruction is annihilates New Alderaan. And this time she dies with the people heroically. The end. Thank you. No, the thank you. I'll take the check now. Cheery music. And
hard pass. Hard pass, Dave.
But I'm going big. Instead of like the solo
death. You are going big.
Instead of the solo death. Let's
put her on a random rock in space and then blow up the rock.
But I'm surrounding her with millions of others. So that it's...
Who are these other people?
The people of the inhabitants of the planet, my friend.
But she was the sole survivor. She's not on
a
planet.
Oh, no, they've built a new civilization. They've built a... It's people from all around now. It's got a more cosmopolitan feel. Like, everyone's kind of from all different factions come around. It's one of the... We don't have to call it New Alderaan. It's one of the Resistance's main planets. And it gets wiped out. And she dies a hero. Or, other than that, the other option is you put her in a ship and blow her up with a TIE fighter. And that's also the other end. So she dies with her soldiers, or she dies with the people on the planet. Either one, weigh it up, but she dies in a huge explosion. And that way, Disney can be like, it's sad, but she's dead, and here's the funeral. And let's move on with our lives. Because sadly, we don't want to use CGI, and we can't recast her. Well, I think recasting will be very disrespectful.
No, there's absolutely no chance of recasting. I think it'd be foolish for them not to have a funeral.
Because I'm just saying, yeah, because then you can go to the funeral and then it's like you really get the emotion. Because we are sad we lost Carrie Fisher and we are sad that it means no more Princess Leia. Like, we are genuinely sad.
But I also think that CGI isn't out of the question.
Oh, I don't think it's out of the question for a little piece of... I think you may have to use CGI in the death scene.
Exactly. You could do that. That would be all right, depending on how she dies.
Are you agreeing with my fucking pitch then?
No.
That she dies on a ship? What's up with the ship? Like, okay, you don't want the planet because you're haunted by the millions of people I'm throwing in as well, aren't you? I can see over there.
Well, no, that you're troubled by that. Starkiller Base isn't a thing anymore. There is no Death Star.
Oh, there's always another Death Star. I'd like the Death Star back. Another Death Star. Let's go again with Death Star 3 this time. And maybe let's not have an exhaust port on it.
I mean, this would be, what, Death Star 4, though? I mean...
3. We had Death Star 1, the original, blown up in New Hope. We had Death Star 2 in Return of the Jedi. We had... So there's 2. So this would be Death Star 3. Starkiller Base.
Starkiller Base was basically
another Death Star. Oh, yeah. Look, if you want to count that as Death Star, yes, this would be 4.
And this is... Real, I mean, we're just retreading all ground now.
Or
we've got to do something different.
Or in the new technology, now they've got the paws on the walkers, so we've also invented star destroyers that are powerful enough to blow up planets themselves. And one of them blows up the planet or the ship. Either way, dude.
No, have her on a raid. Have her with a gun in her hand.
Okay.
Actually out there.
Oh, okay. Better that than just, oh.
Yeah, I don't want to see her meekly die on a ship.
Oh, yeah, just like...
Just sitting there going, there's nothing I can do. Like, she's always been in control. She has always been in charge.
I think it's got to have an element of self-sacrifice.
I want to see her on the front line.
Well, it's got to have an element of self-sacrifice, whatever happens. I want her...
And then you'd have a major character like John Boyega.
Yeah.
Or Poe Dameron show up.
Really like Poe Dameron in the trailer, by the way. Really like where could the light that's going to fight the fire, that's going to do this and that. Like, yeah. You know, it's good.
But have one of them show up to find her, like... Final moments, kind of like you could do it really well. You could do it really nicely, but I think you can't just put her on a ship, put her on a planet, and blow up a planet.
Sounds like
it makes her death so insignificant compared to that.
See, to me, that makes it like so significant because like so many people have died as well, and she's gone down in like this final act of bravery, like taking
but
one for
the team.
It's
not brave. What is?
I don't know.
It's zero bravery involved. She's just sitting on a ship.
We know it's easy. They're not going to go for that because the way you do that is like war is brutal and life is hell. They're not going to do that. They're going to do like she goes out of hero's death, like, you know, yada, yada, yada. Doing what you said, like taking one for the team at the very end, but solo style, being gunned down by like about a billion people, but she saves the lives of whoever, you know.
You'd have it be gunned down, but it's got to be by someone big enough to matter.
What about Phasma? Someone like that?
I was just thinking Phasma. Phasma would be a good clue.
Thank you. Final part on the trailer, Stu. Am I right in saying we saw? Is it Snoke? Snoke fully? Did we saw him? Did we get an actual like size to size comparison of how big he is in the trailer? You saw him in the robe going, "Your destiny." And was there someone in front of him? So you sort of did see how big he was.
A little bit. From what I've gathered, he's basically just a normal human-ish size.
I like the old rumor that he was like Yoda size.
He was tiny.
Yeah.
He had a small man complex. So
imagine if he was tiny, like he was like 2 inches. That would be even more funny. Like he was like a little miniaturized guy.
Like a little Lego man.
Just a real little miniaturized evil bastard. I'm coming up with some great ideas today, Stu. I don't know. Like,
oh, fantastic.
What's been put in my coffee so far?
I mean, it's been done on SpongeBob, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel sometimes like if they put me in charge of these franchises, audiences would genuinely be stunned. That's one thing I can guarantee.
I could agree with that. Audiences would be stunned, Dave. I'm absolutely on board with that sentence.
Shock and awe stuff.
Yep.
By the way, the polls came in on Marvel Knights, Stu.
Uh-huh. And?
Jordan Edwards and Michael Kilishin both agreed that my Uber idea was a superior idea for Marvel Knights. Thank you, drop the mic.
Really?
They liked your idea. Say they liked your idea, but they liked my idea more. And Jordan even said, I was kind of coaxing it out of the kid a little bit.
Yeah, here we go.
I said to him, how about when he turns with the grin? And he was like, thumbs up all the way. And I was like, man, someone needs to green light this shit because I can see it like it's happening in my life. Like, I walk out of that airport, I've killed the bad guys, got a bit of blood on me and stuff. Okay, take me to such and such. Turn around, it's Robbie Reyes. The hair goes up and then the smile comes on. Close credits. Frank does a thumbs up. I mean, it writes itself, Stu. You know? Yeah. My audiences, if you like, audiences, Don't be afraid.
If you want to see one of the great dark evil heroes of the Marvel Universe, Ghost Rider, demoted to Uber driver, vote for Dave.
He's got to make rent. He's got to make rent, Stu. I'm trying to bring him down to earth, you know?
If you want to see Robbie Reyes demoted to Uber driver, as opposed to mechanic, because he already has a day job.
Oh, he's got funding already.
Okay. He has a job.
He's got cash flow. Okay. Well, all right. I mean, you're over the details over there. Sometimes I've got to throw stuff at the wall, Stu. You know? See what sticks. So far, the audiences. Two audience members have voted.
Yes.
They've given a solid yes.
It just happens to be two audience members that you email and talk to regularly. Yeah.
Definitely. Stu, look, Last Jedi trailer, awesome. Now, turning to Blade Runner 2049, you'd seen this prior to last show, and I believe you enjoyed it, Stu.
I really enjoyed this movie. Yeah. It is a fantastic movie.
I saw it. I had a day off earlier this week, a quarterly day, and Dave took himself to the movies. The large Coke, that became a factor. And a coffee. And let me tell you, Stu, very enjoyable film, but also very, very long. It was very much like a good book, actually.
See, I didn't find it too bad because I think it's really well-paced.
It's very well-paced, Stu. No, in fact, the only reason I even knew it was long is because I'm old and have a weak bladder. And all of a sudden I went, we have a situation. I was like, we have a situation because I really need to go to the loo. And Harrison hasn't turned up yet. And I feel like this has been going a long time. I check my watch. I go, this has been going like 2 hours. And I'm like, we're in for another half hour at least. And I was like doing the whole cross legs thing, a lot of different maneuvers in that last 45 minutes. And got through it, really enjoyed it. Came out of the film, did a bit of research, listened to a couple of shows, realized it was over 2.5 hours long. I've got to say...
Look, it is a long movie.
It is long. And I would say to audience members, come in expecting that. But it is such a rewarding movie.
Look, it's fantastic. And I don't think you needed to see Blade Runner.
No, I've seen Blade Runner many times in the past. I meant to watch the final cut again, but frankly, I find Blade Runner actually quite boring in the second half. And I thought this, I'll say this, I think this was better paced. This didn't suffer from the glacial, like, story progress of the original Blade Runner after.
No, I disagree. I actually really like Blade Runner. Like the original Blade Runner.
I like it.
I didn't find it too long and drawn out at all.
I personal taste, I found it very slow once it got going. I think visually beautiful and very influential and a good movie.
And the visuals continue in this one.
Oh, they really do. No, it's stunning. I've got some questions actually, Stu. Okay, so look, I'm giving this like easily a 9.5 out of 10 for me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Like as a film, I would say movie lovers, go watch this movie in the cinema, grasp the visuals, connect it to a good story. Ryan Gosling is very good. I'm not his biggest fanboy, but he's very good in this. Harrison's in it. He's good. It's all round strong.
I actually quite like Jared Leto's performance as well.
Oh my God, I didn't. And can I also say...
You didn't like that?
No, it wasn't that I didn't like it. He's in it so little that I meant to mention this to you. There was no need for him to be blind in real life for that performance.
No. I absolutely feel like he's taken this step too far.
But he wasn't in it that much.
A little way too pretentious.
He was fine as an actor in the movie. I had no real problems with his performance. He got what he was going for. He didn't take me out of it. But I thought, wow, all that effort for that? You didn't move around. You stayed in the one area.
I mean, look, if no one had told you that he'd done all that pretentious crap...
Sure.
...and that he'd been wearing blinding contact lenses...
I had no problems with his performance at all.
You didn't know any of the backstory. You'd watch this and go, yeah, he was fine. He was great.
No, I thought he was fine. I had no problems with his actual performance whatsoever.
He was pretty good.
I think Jared Leto is obviously an idiot who doesn't...
I think he's just pretentious.
He's very pretentious. But no, I had no problems with his performance. He was fine in it, man, to be honest. He's not in it that much. So, I mean, it's like, he does what he's kind of a
Canadian doctor. This film is largely Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. Like, if Ryan Gosling was terrible, this film
would
be terrible.
Between him and his girlfriend.
Yeah, now, here's my thing. This relationship fascinated me, okay?
Yeah.
I would have that, I swear to God, if that was available. Well, wouldn't you, in that world?
Maybe. Well, I don't know.
No, maybe for me.
It's a weird...
But I've got questions about it, Stu. Okay, so, look, these are spoilers for the fucking movie, I guess, because we're discussing story details, kids.
It's been out for a couple of weeks, though.
There's a lot of spoilers in the whole thing, but I want to dial right in to the relationship between Gosling and... Well, it's basically like an in-house AI.
Yeah.
So, or like a pleasure sort of doll or something. What was she? She was kind of like a girlfriend, basically, in his apartment. And she was she started off as a holograms kind of thing. And she sort of had routines and stuff. But then he, at the beginning of the movie, he does something so she can walk around with him.
So originally there's a projector attached to the roof of the apartment.
Yep.
And she can move around inside that room.
And she can sort of play different roles and stuff.
Oh, visually, they can change anything.
She's a very attractive actress, can I say.
Yeah, less than an actress, though. She's been around for a little while.
Oh, my God. I'm in love with her.
She's done a few horror movies and things like that.
I want to know more. I was enchanted by that actress, frankly.
Yeah.
So she's kind of starts out, you kind of get the impression it's kind of like a bit of a cut price model at the start. You know, that's what he can afford. That's what the service is.
So, yeah, she's basically restricted to that room.
Yeah.
But they're having conversations, or when he's in the kitchen and she's
She sort of knows him.
Yeah, and then he buys the little upgrade, which basically gives him remote access to this program.
And it makes her a bit better, too. So he carries
around this remote.
But she can feel, like, the rain and stuff now.
No.
I thought she could feel it. Do you remember she's holding her hand out and the rain's coming on to her and stuff?
It's just going through her.
Oh, I thought it was also hitting it, like she was more of a hard light projection now. Like, it was, like, hitting
it. Hard light?
I don't know what that even means, Stu. But, no, I thought that she was holding her hand out. I thought you'd be impressed by my reference. And so, like...
Science over here, buddy.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever, Stu. You know, and I thought it was actually stopping the rain.
No.
So I was going through.
You were watching... You'd get a little blue spark every time the rain went through her.
Got it.
You get a little blue...
So she's still a hologram, but I think it also enhanced her personality. I think she had more options then. She was a bit more real. Before she was like a...
It was the exact same character.
Really?
Yeah.
But she could now just walk around with him.
Yeah, she could go anywhere that he was.
And she was sort of like, when he was in the car, the flying car, she was in the flying car. She was still connected to him though, wasn't she? She couldn't just go...
She was connected to that remote that he had in his pocket.
Got it. Oh, right. Got it. Okay.
Right, that's all he did. The upgrade just let her walk around without being that in that room with the projector.
Okay.
That was the first time she'd ever been on the balcony. That's why she went out there. She wanted to go outside.
Wow.
She'd never been outside of that
room. I wish I had you as an AI, Stu, because you could explain things to me in life that I see, because I'm constantly confused. Okay, right. I understand.
Which is why that... I'm not going to spoil it, but that scene with Harrison and him towards the end is such a big scene. Because the remote gets stomped on.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. I understand that. Okay, so here's my other question, though. So I get all that. That's cool. It's a fucking cool piece of technology.
Yeah.
Okay. Later on in the movie, he's kind of like, it's towards the end, he's kind of lost a bit, he's walking along. He sees an advertisement for that service, doesn't he? It's called Say Anything You Want or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm confused because that's just the generic advertisement, not connected to him, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that's the same girl.
Yeah.
Now, my question is, I'm very confused, like... Is the actual thing just that they will just mold whatever to your personality type? That's the service. So if you like...
I mean, no, the AI learns. Like, he told it something that day and then she remembered it later.
Okay. So that's just the base model. That's the base model of the actual service. That's kind of like a prostitute in the thing. She's like a streetwalker, but she comes down and she's like, hey, go on, big guy or Joe or whatever.
That giant billboard that he was...
Yes, yes.
There's a generic program that you buy.
Okay.
That comes out with that girl.
Got it.
Who has a personality and everything. Like, there's not...
Sure.
It's not like a blank person that you then program yourself.
Yeah, but as the hooker said to her, you're not as deep as you think to her, remember, when she left? There's not as much to you as you think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really found it interesting, frankly. I think that was an interesting concept in the movie. I saw some people on the internet were calling that as a very sexist movie. Whatever. Like, I mean, it was what it was, I guess. Like, I mean,
there is a little... I didn't find it too... Like, when I was watching it, that wasn't what I was thinking.
No, it was more of a lonely sort of thing. Like, it showed how disconnected the world had become. Like, that was all he had, really.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about it, he didn't... he was shunned, dude, by the cops. If you remember when he was walking in, they knew certain things about him and were shunning him. He came back to... If you remember how...
No, it was because he was a replicant.
I know. I was trying to not be a spoiler to the audience, but...
Oh, come on. Everyone knows that.
That was my one attempt at trying to be...
That's 2 minutes in.
Yeah, but I almost said it as well. I was like, and just for various reasons that... Yeah, it is like a minute in or 2 minutes in. Anyway, so apart from that one spoiler, kids, that's the only attempt I'm going to make at spoilers. And but when he walked in, he was being shunned. But if you remember when he went into his apartment, how there was like people loitering in the hallway. They were awful. Like it's a dark world. And in his apartment, he had some sanctuary. And he had like the hostess situation almost.
Well, yeah, it's just showing that he was living like a second class life in that city. Right. Like he had this crappy rundown apartment in a really bad neighborhood.
Yeah, real bad.
And he'd walk in there and then he had this like pristine girlfriend there and you're thinking, what the hell's...
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Like, I really like that scene though, because it really told you all that. Like, it was very smart. I really, really think very highly of the movie, frankly.
Yeah.
I would recommend...
For me, like two or three times throughout it, I just went, this is just pure... The director is just so strong.
Yeah. Hey, Denis Villeneuve, is that his name?
Denis Villeneuve, yeah.
Okay. Very good. I mean, he did Arrival, didn't he?
He did Arrival. He's fantastic.
Really good.
If you enjoyed Arrival, you're going to love this. It is very much...
I've watched Arrival, fell asleep. Prefer this one. Probably because it's skewed slightly more to my interests.
There's two more action in this, yeah.
Yeah, two very good movies. And I think, I'll just say, I think one for movie lovers. You know, you don't need to be a sci-fi geek. This is one for people who like good movies.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a fantastic film.
I wouldn't be surprised if this gets Academy Award consideration of some kind.
I imagine it'll get a nomination somewhere, but it's probably going to be something like sound mixing or...
They never give it to... The stunt work
is brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, the visuals. What's the visuals?
Yeah, exactly. There's plenty of things in here that are, you know, worthy of getting Oscars. I doubt someone like Ryan Gosling's going to pick up an Oscar.
No, I don't think Ryan... I think Ryan Gosling gave a good performance, but I don't think he gave, like, a groundbreaking... I was thinking more like Best Picture or Best Director, you know?
Best Director, possibly. Something I can't like see it getting to Best Picture.
No, I can't see it
quite up there.
Yeah, I'm just... Yeah.
But, yeah. It's going to get a nod for something.
It's in the conversation. It really is an interesting film. Now, Stu, where were you on the original Pacific Rim? Because I'll be brutally honest, I fucking love the original Pacific Rim.
I really enjoy the original Pacific Rim. Yeah. I am a huge fan of anything Guillermo del Toro does.
Me too, Stu, actually. I love Guillermo del Toro. Now, Pacific Rim Uprising, it's not directed by Guillermo del Toro, although I believe he may be a producer on it. In fact, I know he is. The trailer came out for the sequel. I dug it, man. It's fun. It looks like popcorn fun.
It does. It looks like one of those big, dumb, fun popcorn movies.
Mm.
Go watch it. Switch your brain off for a couple of hours.
Dude, I'm going to seriously, like this and fucking Thor. Thor, I barely eat popcorn, but Thor, Justice League and this, I'm taking my popcorn in. You know what I'm saying? Because I think it's honestly, it was a really interesting and it was just a fun trailer. It was like a fun version of Transformers. I like the craziness of the kaiju versus the monsters versus the monsters we create, you know?
Yeah, so the Geigers, wasn't it?
Geigers, yeah. I love the original. Now, in this one, correct me if I'm wrong, Stu, John Boyega is the lead?
Yeah, John Boyega is the lead. It's a big cast.
Huge cast.
Massive cast in this.
Do we have a release date in this one, Stu?
It's 2018.
Okay. So next year. A lot of writing on this film too, because we had the director, Stephen S. D. Knight, revealed to Nerdist that there are plans afoot to turn Pacific Rim into a broader universe, Stu. And I've got a big quote from him, which I'll read out if you want, in response to a question about that. He goes, "I'm certainly hoping so. I think you'll definitely probably get more comics. The plan was to use this movie as a launching pad. If enough people show up to this, so if it's a hit..." We've already talked about the plot of the third movie and how the end of the third movie would expand the universe to a Star Wars, Star Trek-style franchise where you can go in many different directions. You can go main canon, you can go spin-offs, you can go one-offs. Yeah, that's the plan. I would love to see an animated TV show based on this. The more I read this guy's quote, the less it sounds like there's actually a plan and just, like, let's just see how this movie goes.
So what I've read is they have planned out a third movie.
Okay.
And in that third movie, there are a bunch of options for spin-offs.
Okay.
So they introduce a couple of big characters that then go on to have their own stories.
Well, I hope this movie hits them, because it needs to hit for that to happen.
Yeah, but they've done it right. They released a movie with zero intention of doing even a sequel.
Yep. See what the box office is like.
Exactly. It does really well. They then go, all right, let's do a sequel.
Yep.
But it is a sequel only.
Yep.
If this goes well, and we've got the budget and we've got everything ready to do a third, then why not do a third, fourth?
Oh, I agree.
I'm like, that's the perfect way to start a universe.
Dude,
you don't go one movie in Let's make this universe.
Dark Universe style over at Universal.
Dark Universe style.
Oh, yeah, we've got The Mummy and about 1,000 other projects. Oh, no, we don't really. Oh,
where they cram in three too many major characters into a movie.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to work in these spin-offs and tie-ins without having developed a single good movie.
I would put Mummy as one of my biggest disappointments of the year, frankly, so far, like in terms of movies.
Yeah.
Not just in terms of life, Stu, but that as well. I don't really have that many disappointments. I've been hitting winners, you know?
This year's life, anyway.
I picked up a Wolverine statue, so I mean...
It's been a good week.
Yeah, my life's gone fine. If we've gone and choked to death in my sleep, that's the only thing. It's the only danger Dave's facing. Choking to death in his sleep. If I could just avoid that one thing.
You've got to stop pissing off your girlfriend.
Poor Michelle. She's like, when will this finally end?
Just gently choking you while you sleep.
Yeah. How much longer? Stu, I'm turning to something which I found hilarious. A bit of dad news. Mark Ruffalo accidentally live streamed the first 10 minutes of Thor Ragnarok for the world premiere.
Oh, I love this.
So good, Stu. I mean...
So Mark Ruffalo was streaming a bunch... He was streaming a big photo session where he and the rest of the cast were all lined up taking
massive photos. He loves this kind of shit. I see this on Facebook. His Facebook Live, Mark
Ruffalo. So yeah, he was live streaming it, trying to act cool.
And no one
walks into the cinema and everyone's sitting there still on the live stream. It's now in his pocket. He's got no idea.
Zero idea.
About 10 minutes in, he looks at his phone, realizes it's still live streaming, and he has this guilty as hell look on his face before the stream just ends.
This is gold, man.
It's fantastic.
This just shows me that this guy's got no idea. He loves this kind of stuff, this Facebook Live stuff, but he doesn't really get it. Like,
oh, this is like the third or fourth time where Mark Ruffalo's just putting his foot in it. He said something that he shouldn't.
I mean, but who cares? That's like, fantastic. It's lovable. And let's face it.
It's super endearing, though, isn't it?
It's very endearing. And the reviews on Thor are so positive. There's so much positive buzz towards this movie. I really think that this movie is going to max out where it probably should as a box office. I think that this is going to be one of those situations where you're going to see a movie, I think, perform to expectations and squeeze the audience for what it's worth.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
I really feel that this could be... people are saying it's a bit shorter than expected, and some people I've heard say it's a little bit slight, but apparently it's a lot of fun, which is what I'm down for.
I mean, that just fits in with it. Like, Taika Waititi, the director, is known for fun. His comedy is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's been in a few shorter movies. Mockumentary Into the Night.
The Vampire One, yeah.
Which was hilarious. It just fits with these characters so well.
I think Marvel have made a really good choice with this director.
Really good choice.
When is the release date on this in Australia? Is it the 20th or something? It's very close. It's 20th or 23rd.
Very close.
So is it like not next week here, but the week after?
It's
might even be this Thursday.
This week.
Okay. It would be the week after then. And I think a week after that in the States.
So, yeah. I mean, in the States, it's... released a few days after us, I believe.
Okay.
I think it's released on a Friday in the States, where it's a Thursday here.
Got it, okay.
But here it's released... It's got 3rd of November in the States.
Okay. I think it's 23rd here, or 24th, something like that. You going to see it, Stu? Going to make the journey?
I don't know. 26th of October here.
26th of October? You...
I mean, I may have already purchased a couple of tickets see it.
It's you and your girlfriend, isn't it? I can just imagine, you know, just kicking back.
I may have already seen three screenings.
Stu and his lover. So, I mean, Stu and his lover, his consort. She's like treated like a queen taken to the movie. do you like my life? Just filling in the blanks, Stu.
Yeah, just filling in all these blanks. This is what he does when he's choking to death.
Is it Greg? Poor Greg. I think it's going to be fantastic. Now, Stu, I heard some reports. Mark Ruffalo commented that the Hulk is going to have a personal solo arc over three movies, which Kevin Feige supposedly confirmed. So starting in Ragnarok, this is because Universal still control the distribution of a solo Hulk movie, while Marvel owns the character itself and the associated characters around Hulk.
So, yeah, I mean, they could do a Hulk solo movie. They'd run into a few problems. They'd have to grease some wheels. It'd cost them a lot more.
Exactly, because Universal still controlled the distribution
deal. Exactly. So what they're going to do instead is break up this Hulk movie into a few different sections.
Very clever.
It's a good way to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, Hulk's such a fan favourite.
Yes. And he works so well in the group or with like Thor.
He works really well in groups.
Yeah, like if you did a solo Hulk movie, you'd want to have someone in there as well anyway. So why not just do it the other way around? You know?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Hmm. No, I think it's great.
So, I mean, I think they get to do the best of both worlds in this. They get to have a solo Hulk movie, but you're not bogged down by one character driven movies.
One of my friends at work, her little boy, he loves Abomination. He's got the Abomination. He's like a young kid. He's like 9 or 10 or something. And he's got like the big Abomination figure from one of the Hulk movies. He just loves it.
From the original Hulk, Hulk movie.
And he's got like, and I was telling her about my Wolverine statue, and she said, that's how he as well. He's starting to build a lot of statues. And I said, well, have, you know, deep pockets.
Yeah. Start saving because they get expensive really quickly.
Yeah. And these kids, of course, want it all, you know? Like,
oh, yeah.
No, exactly. No, I think that's awesome, Stu. Now, looking more trailers, it really is the week of trailers, isn't it, Stu? We're the trailer reviewers this week.
Yeah.
New Mutants, obviously, is the new It's a movie, actually. It's not a TV show. It's a new movie coming out from Fox starring the New Mutants. Real horror flavor in this trailer, Stu.
Yeah, they're going pretty dark with this one, which I actually quite like.
Yeah, I think it gives it a different air, and I think it works so well on Legion, that also from Fox.
Legion was fantastic.
Really, really good.
So I think they're really trying to cash in on the whole Legion. There's quite a clinical vibe to it, which felt very Legion-esque.
I think this could play really well with a younger audience too, Stu. I really feel like that teenage college crowd could really respond to this.
You know? For sure.
I really do. I just feel that this the kind of people who like those slasher films and stuff like that, it's a younger audience that it's skews to in cinemas, that was really popular in the early 2000s. I think they could come in. I really think New Mutants could be a bit of a dark horse to really pick up some decent box office.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's got Maisie Williams as the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Who's massive in Game of Thrones right now. Yes. So there's a lot of crossover fans.
Does she play Arya Stark, the assassin, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Well done, Dave.
Thank you. I'm just connecting the dots. You remember I came in halfway through Game of Thrones, so I'm often like...
Doing pretty well. Never read the books. Halfway through, season 6 or something?
No. Came in after whenever the Red Wedding was.
Season 3, I think.
After that. Never seen that.
You never saw it?
No, never saw it, mate. Came in the season where... The season where Cersei and her son are kind of trapped in some sort of siege situation. I think it's the season after that. They're trapped. They're sort of saved at the last minute. She literally thinks they're going to die. They're being encircled by someone. I don't know. That was when I started watching. And then I came in real full-heartedly the next season with the character who got killed by the Mountain or whatever his name was. The swashbuckling kind of like guy.
The swashbuckling kind of
guy. The swordsman guy.
He's played by Pedro Pascal.
That's when I came in. And that's where I became fully fledged. But we're looking at probably, am I right, season 4 or 5 by that point, Jim?
Something like that. I can't remember the order. I think it's 4.
Classic Dave.
Classic Dave. Rocking up says, oh, hey, this show's all right. Let's just start season 4.
Let's just start. I can roll with it.
Don't even worry about
Dave, you could watch all the three previous seasons. They're all available on streaming. Yeah, you know, I got better things to do with that time. No, buying Wolverine statues can do itself. I've got to do that kind of thing. I've got to read things like Christ on Infinite Earths. Yeah, that took me about 4 years. Now, Stu, Gambit.
So the New Mutants trailer, it felt really, really clinical, right?
Mm.
Like a lot of scenes shot in... It felt like a mental asylum.
It is a mental asylum. That is what it is. It's a mental asylum that's haunted, I believe. It's an insane asylum.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's haunted or whether it's mutant abilities or what's happening, but...
Yeah.
It felt, dark, clinical, cold.
How twisted was that with the face? That guy turned around with the face. He had the smiley face on.
Yeah, that was good.
That freaked me out.
And the classic horror movie... trope where you push the ghost pushes through the wall suddenly.
Yes, yeah.
Brilliant.
No, it's good stuff. I thought it looked really interesting. I think they're really clever to differentiate themselves out from the other X-Men movies, give it its own flavour, you know?
Yeah, the other thing is at the moment, X-Men, like, Old Man Logan did so well.
Mm.
So the adult audience is there and willing to spend a lot of money on this stuff.
Mm.
So I like that they're pushing this New Mutants trailer towards the adult audience going horror.
And would you really be like a college audience as well? I think this could get a lot of teens
exactly.
And everything.
But like they're pushing it away from like the Runaways and your...
Yeah, yeah.
These other kind of teen TV shows and movies that are coming out soon.
Yeah.
They're definitely heading towards the adult audience, trying to get them more excited.
And also on Fox, Stu, just while we're talking about it, I watched the first episode of The Gifted. It was on Hulu. Very enjoyable. Nice. I'm not saying it's breaking the TV model and just, you know, we're not watching the next Breaking Bad here, but it was very enjoyable, you know? And and I'm going to watch season two today, actually, after the show. Will I hang around? God knows. You know, I'm very fluid, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of things trying to compete for my attention. I've got to get through vice principals. But I will keep going on it. I've been watching a bit of Hulu recently. They had Curb Your Enthusiasm come back. One of my favorite shows of all time with Barry David and Vice Principals and Will and Grace came back. I mean, all the classic shows are coming back. And all the
classics are doing reruns now.
And I was just watching, I watched three of them in a row, then Gifted came up and I went, hey, let's try something new, bang, for the show. And I quite enjoyed it. It is your classic, like, Mutants on the Run. It's basically what it is. Mutants on the Run. And done interestingly. So I'm down for it. Like, you know, let's see how it goes. Now, Stu, turning to another piece out of Fox, Gambit. Longer development with Channing Tatum.
Gambit movie.
Yeah. Lands a release date and a director. Now, Stu, you had some words about this director, Gore Verbinski?
Gore Verbinski has been announced.
Known for Pirates, am I right?
Oh, he's known for a few things. So he started out the career with Mouse Hunt.
Never saw it.
Fun little kids movie.
Sure.
Enjoyable.
Back in the 80s or something?
97.
Okay, never seen it.
Fun little movie. I grew up with that one. That was great as like a young kid.
Okay.
And then he went, did a complete 180 and did The Ring.
Okay.
Brilliant horror movie.
Good movie, yeah.
And at that point, everyone was saying this director's going to be doing great things.
Yes.
He's able to mix it up. His genre works brilliant.
Yep, that was a huge hit.
So after The Ring, his next movie, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Monster hit.
Monster hit.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first
one. And he's working with megastars now.
Johnny Depp.
Orlando Bloom. Like, sure.
That was a big hit. That's where I know his name from. That's
where most people know Gore Verbinski.
Yeah.
Since then, we've had problems.
Well, he's done at least two more Pirates, if not more.
He did Pirates 2 and 3.
Okay.
Both of which were averaging terrible.
Can't even remember them, yeah.
Awful films. In between them, though, he did The Weatherman.
One of the most boring films I've ever seen.
Not even the crazy-ass Nicolas Cage could save the Weatherman from being
Michelle and I put that on, and I remember turning to her and said, and 10 minutes in, this is the most boring thing I've ever seen, and we turned it off.
Like, when I saw on the cover, and I was like, all right, Nick Cage.
Me too, yeah.
Let's get ready to have some crazy-ass acting.
Exactly.
Loving this. It's and then dull. Weatherman came
out. Fuck, it's dull.
The most boring film of all time.
I don't even remember what it's about. I didn't make it to the first 10 minutes. That's how far we got.
Oh,
if you're going to put me to sleep in 10 minutes, you deserve to be turned off. Basically, is my attitude. You know?
I mean, that was...
So that's a misfire.
As if there was none of the problem. So he follows the Weatherman with the two Pirates films.
Okay.
The second and
well,
third.
Well, dude, he's loved by the studio. So he's not great. Huge dollars for the studios.
And then he goes from there to do Rango.
Which I've never seen.
Terrible animated film with Johnny Depp.
Seen it.
Then he does The Lone Ranger. Terrible real life.
Have you noticed
Johnny Depp's in all this?
I've got to say, Lone Ranger for me was a miss.
I mean, Lone Ranger for everyone was a miss. That was a terrible movie.
It was a big flop. I don't think it was quite as bad as what people said, but it wasn't good. I watched it and it was pretty boring. It's overly long, actually.
I mean, if you look at his IMDb page, it's mostly misses.
Okay.
Two or three hits early on, but since then, nothing.
Yeah, and Gambit's not going to be... Yeah, interesting. Maybe he's looking to redeem himself with the Channing Tatum property, Gambit, you know, if they've got a strong script. I'm not going to write him off completely because the Pirates movies, especially the first one, succeeded so well, as did The Ring. But as you've just mentioned, that's a lot of misses after that. And Pirates 3, I don't even remember. They got worse and worse.
Pirates 2 and 3, I'm pretty sure that was the two-parter. That was the to-be-continued type one.
Yeah, but it wasn't interesting.
I mean, awful.
It wasn't. It was just long and just more of the same. Yeah. And just Johnny Depp got more and more annoying. And, like, everything... I know it did really well. They're huge hits.
Yeah.
But, Weatherman... So, I mean,
for me, Gore Verbinski's going against this movie. That's not a pro for me.
Yeah, I guess they're going to hope... that by signing who is considered a major power player, like, you know, based on his reputation, that he's going to bring some quality in. They're going for a name. People know the name of Gore Verbinski. I mean,
people have heard the name, and I think most people, when they hear a name they've heard of before,
yeah.
they don't really know the filmographies. They just go, oh, I've heard of that director. He must be
with him. I'd go Pirates. I know he did Pirates. I didn't know any of the other ones. I didn't even know he did The Ring, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Stu, who knows?
So I mean, that's a bit of a miss.
And Gambit itself is a mystery project because God knows what they're doing with Gambit.
The other little problem they've hit is the release date that they've announced.
When is it, actually? Yeah.
So it's Valentine's Day, February 14 in 2019.
So early 2019.
Early 2019.
Well, Gambit is considered the legendary lover, which is why they've gone Valentine's Day. Yeah, that'll be in the marketing.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's going to be marketed heavily.
I wonder if Rogue will be in it.
The problem is, it's a week after Sony's project, Silver and Black.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
So those are going to be competing head-to-head.
That'll be interesting for the show.
Which won't? I think that'll be interesting.
I know I'm more excited by Silver and Black, frankly.
And
But even that, we don't know anything about this, Stu. Like,
neither of these are going to be massive, massive blockbuster films.
No. I think they'll be likely to take 300 million
worldwide. These two guys are going to be cannibalizing each other's marketing a little bit.
For sure.
So that's going to hurt both.
Gambit is barely bigger than Black Cat and Silver Sable.
And then the biggest problem is 2 weeks later, Marvel's Captain Marvel comes out.
Yeah, well, that'll annihilate both of those.
Which is going to blow these guys out of the water. So they're not going to get a long run.
Unless
Gambit's got 2 weeks to make its money before Marvel blows it out of the water.
Yeah.
And in both those weeks, it's going to be competing with Silver and Black.
Interesting. Hey, good times for us as moviegoers.
It's going to be a fun month for us.
For us. For the studios, yeah, that's a problem. That's a packed month.
But that's
I think it's getting harder and harder, Stu, for them not to avoid each other because the studios are so reliant on
superheroes. You've got three major players now with DC, Marvel, and Fox. And now Sony's coming out with a few spin-offs.
And let's face it, Fox, they might not have the sort of positive groundswell that Marvel has, but they've had a lot of financial hits and done very well with their franchise.
Financially, they're doing well.
Yeah, and they're also branching out on TV shows. Fox have been quite ambitious with their X-Men stuff and quite successful. They're doing really well with it. It's so funny they've never been able to do anything with Fantastic Four because they're really learning how to milk the X-Men franchise really well.
Yeah, and especially in their TV, they've done really well.
Yeah, and good more power to them because, you know what, we're spoiled for sure. Silver and Black, whatever it's called, Stu, we know nothing. God knows what it's going to be like. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, it's very...
You've had me pitching Naomi Watts now for about 3 months. That's been the biggest news. Remember when I'm in bed, I'm thinking, who's this woman's face rotating in my mind? And then I had to check IMDb. It took me like 2 hours of research, kids, and I got there. It was Naomi Watts, which was the one I thought it was originally. I think it's Naomi Watts, but I wasn't sure. So that's been the biggest news about Silver and Black we've had in months. Me, you know, generating cast lists. We don't know anything else.
We've got nothing on that.
Yeah.
We've got next to nothing on Gambit. Like, let's be honest.
Channing Tatum is attached. He's been attached. Is he getting paid to keep staying? Do you think they have to keep renewing his contract? What are they doing? Because he's been attached to the movie now for like 4 years.
I don't know. It's been off and on. Like,
He loves the character. That's the one thing. He loves it. But many an actor, I'm sorry to say, many an actor has loved the character and been tried their hardest in a terrible movie. That's most of the Punisher movies. Thomas Jane loves the character of Punisher. He tried his hardest in a Punisher. Doesn't make it a good movie.
Yeah, and Ryan Reynolds tried his hardest for Deadpool in the first
iteration
we saw of that.
And even though I saw it in the cinema 9 times, I know the general critical consensus wasn't that it was great.
God-awful movie.
Yeah, but that's my point. Many an actor loves the role. It doesn't make the movie good.
No, it doesn't.
Well, we'll see, Stu. I mean, I'm... Honestly, Gambit, he struggles to hold down a comic title. I'm sorry.
He was super popular in the animated TV show.
And he was great in the animated TV show.
Yeah.
But you need Rogue. You need
X-Men. There's a lot of fans out there, and I think if you bring in a Gambit solo film and have a bunch of little cameos of other X-Men dropping in and out.
Could work.
You could totally do it.
I would bring in Rogue. I would recast him.
And right now, Channing Tatum's name is pretty good.
He's the only thing that's got this franchise, this movie going.
See, for me, the release date and Gore Verbinski go against it. Channing Tatum's for it.
Oh, he's for it. He's a for it. Yeah.
I think Gambit in general is a plus for me. I like the character.
Gambit done well, I love. I mean, the playing cards out of his hands, you know, a sassy character. I can see that. You just need to give him a story. They struggle in the comics to settle on solo Gambit stuff. That's what I'm saying. He's not the easiest character to do. He needs Rogue. I would like to see the Rogue Gambit romance in the movie. Why not? You know?
Yeah, but I think they need a good Rogue.
I'm sure they can find it, dude.
Because at the moment, have they recast another Rogue?
No, not so
We've
far.
Only got the Anna
We Paquin. Only had Anna Paquin, who was in Days of Future Past as well in the future.
Yeah.
So they're not going to use Anna Paquin. So they'll recast it. Of course you could do it, dude. Of course you could do it. And I would do a not the emo goth version either. I would do a more sassy Southern gal.
Oh, I would absolutely do the... heavily Southern, obviously.
Yeah, with the I do with the hair streak and the big hair.
Yeah, you'd go like, for like the full on 80s look.
That's exactly what I'm saying, Stu.
And you'd make it loud and fun.
I'd even probably put her in just like imagine Deadpool's costume. I'd put her in the Rogue version or something like that.
The green and yellow. Yeah,
I'd put her in the green and gold version. I'd really go, this is a different Rogue. The classic Rogue.
Yeah.
Why not? Like, and let's see if Warnings just respond. You know what I mean? Like, you may as well go for it.
Look, if you're pulling out a character that can make playing cards into weapons...
Sure.
You're going crazy.
It's easy to do Gambit. I mean, Gambit, he's in a trench coat. He's a smooth talker.
Yep. Yeah, but I'd love to see him get the eyes right.
Oh, yeah.
Have the red irises and the black eyes.
Does he wear glasses normally to cover that up?
He wears, like, shades quite a bit, just so he looks...
Badass 90 shades, like the sort of sub-visor ones. The big
visor shades.
Yeah, I love that kind of shit.
Yeah, he's wearing that with a big trench coat.
He's pretty cool. Look, I would if this could work, if it could all click, and suddenly Fox have got a Gambit thing going, you know, that'd just be great. To get there is going to be harder, though, than I think any of the other projects. I think Deadpool was fantastic, but I think Deadpool's somehow a more flexible character, you know, with just a lot more stories. But, you know, Gambit, there's a film there, but it's been on the floor, dude, for like 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, there's been like 10 years of talks about Gambit, and now's the chance. We'll see if they get there. They've got to get the right script. They've had this is the third director attached.
I mean, to be honest, this whole Wolverine Origins, it killed a lot of projects.
Oh, the original film.
Yeah.
Well, it did the opposite of what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to set up...
Like, it was meant to spawn Deadpool and Gambit movies.
But to be honest, a lot of that was Fox, because the movie made money, dude. It made big money, Wolverine Origins.
And true, but we've already said making money is not the same
as making a good film. Okay, but just go with my logic here. Okay, when Transformers makes huge amounts of money and critics hate it, the studio just goes and makes another Transformers movie. I don't know why Fox didn't continue on building their universe. Critics hated Wolverine Origins, but it made money, and their plan was to do Magneto Origins, and it got trapped in development hell forever, which finally, years later, led to First Class. That was the seeds, because I followed it closely.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm saying is it was Fox that paused the whole project. They didn't have faith in Deadpool at all until literally the footage got leaked. Like, well, Fox had a lot of reluctance.
Yeah, and it's not just about the movie making money.
Hmm.
It's about the critical response to individual characters in that movie.
Yeah, but what I'm saying
the critical response to Wolverine was not good.
Sure.
But the critical response to Hugh Jackman as Wolverine
was great. Yeah.
Was fantastic.
So hence we got the Wolverine, which was a better movie.
A second Wolverine Origins movie.
Hmm.
The critical response to Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool was terrible.
I loved Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. In Wolverine Origins. Until he got the mouse sewn up.
Was awful.
No, he's acting in the scenes where he's just Wade Wilson, I thought was cool.
Him as Wade Wilson until he started flashing swords faster than anyone could see.
Yeah.
And he was cutting bullets mid-flight. Like, that's not Deadpool.
Oh, yeah, but I don't know.
People said he made a good Wade Wilson, but he was a fucking terrible Deadpool.
Well, that's on Fox. They reshot, dude. If you go into
But you look at the individual characters. They sewed
his mouth up, dude. They sewed his mouth up. It wasn't even Ryan Reynolds playing the guy when they sewed the mouth up. Okay, they reshot the whole end of Wolverine Origins where him and Sabretooth.
Yeah, but none of that matters.
I'm saying it was all terrible. All this was terrible.
Yeah, I'm agreeing. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but my point I'm trying to make here is Fox fucked that up. They fucked up the whole thing. Like, you could all.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I know. I'm just.
What?
I'm just trying to pivot out of something here, Stu, to make a point. Okay, there was a lot of frustration in the fan base that they didn't pivot out of that, because you easily could have done it. They did eventually. They did Days of Future Past, but it took them years to get past. It took them years to put together X-Men First Class and work their way out of the mess they worked themselves into on Wolverine Origins. They should have just. What studios do more now is they look at the numbers, they crunch the numbers, and they sort of ignore the critics. The critics now are becoming less
less. No, that's the opposite.
No, they do. They look at big franchise things. In my opinion, Stu. You look at, you look at Pirates. You look at Transformers is the biggest example. It's critic-proof.
You didn't hear what I said. They don't care about the movie as a whole. They look at individual characters and individual components.
Oh, I see. Like testing of the characters.
Optimus Prime rates through the roof in every movie.
That they definitely do. Yes.
Every critic agrees Optimus Prime, brilliant character, brilliant voice actor,
yeah.
great part of the movie.
So you audience test it, you critic test it, you look at different
points. So what do we get? We get another movie with an Optimus Prime.
Mm.
But you look at all the really shitty characters that destroy that movie, they don't show up again.
Mm. But one thing
we never see those characters again.
One thing that
we never saw Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool again. We saw a completely different version of Deadpool.
Sure.
Years later, and it wasn't because of the studio. It was because the footage leaked. The footage leaked, and the
Fox finally.
If none of that had excited. Happened, Fox wouldn't have gone ahead with that.
If the footage hadn't leaked, we wouldn't have Deadpool.
No,
it's the best thing that happened.
Because Fox. That single character was so hated in that movie.
Yeah.
The Gambit character also did not go down well.
No, Gambit was not good in it.
Which is why it's taken years to get there. But Hugh Jackman was brilliant in that movie.
No, you're right there.
There were a few small characters.
And remember, Hugh Jackman had been good before, too.
That people loved in that movie.
Yeah.
Sabretooth, they loved in that movie.
He was good. He was actually one of the strengths of the movie, Lee Schreiber.
Lee Schreiber
in his defense. Brilliant. I've seen that movie so many times, I can split it down into so many segments, and he is one of the saving graces.
And William Stryker, rated well as a character, right? And all of a sudden, you get Days of Future Past,
X-Men First Class,
and X-Men First Class, and you're getting these characters that show up again, but all the characters that didn't work, we never see again.
Which is fine. That's
how it works. They can reboot X-Men. That's fine. They keep the characters that work. They ditch the ones that don't.
One of the smartest things they did was, and you are right, one of the smartest things they did was bringing back to First Class. Because I always thought, because what they talked about for like 2 years after Origins was like, we want to do Origins Magneto. And I kept thinking, why are you limiting yourself? Why not just do Origins of the actual X-Men? And that's what they eventually work their way around to. Because, you know, sometimes I think, like, if you do Origins on solo characters in a movie, you can really limit the storytelling a bit. And I was just like, they were like, we've got this, because it turned out, you've already seen in X-Men 1, you see the origin of Magneto in the concentration camp. And then in First Class, they did it so well, how he's the Nazi hunter. Like, it was just perfect. And I'm like, that's all you needed to do. You didn't need a whole movie telling you that. Like, just that his character arc in First Class was just fantastic.
No, but again, the studio wanted to do an Origins because Magneto as a character rated through the roof.
Of course, of course.
He was one of the absolute shining highlights.
He was great. Like, I mean,
in every movie he's been in.
Ian McKellen, until that point, had been Magneto, and he was loved. And then Fassbender came in, and he was great as well.
I mean, Ian McKellen's Magneto was the second most popular character after Wolverine.
Shoot, it was amazing.
And that's why the studio was so keen on doing an Origin.
100%.
It wasn't that the Origin motto was working for them. Because they'd just done old Wolverine Origins, which was a flop.
Correctly. No, I know, but they wanted to have that be the branding, the title of it, and do.
I think that was, the idea. Because they desperately wanted a Magneto movie.
Exactly.
And they ended up going, let's just do a Magneto-centric
and
movie.
And of course,
but we'll avoid that branding because of...
Yeah, and when you've got Ian McKellen pushing God knows how old, of course it's going to be a younger version, you know? Like, with probably, I imagine, they would have imagined having Ian McKellen in it as well. Yeah. Anyway, the good news is, Stuart, it all did work out. Messy, though, the continuity is, I think Fox have shown that, like, by just ignoring the continuity and just doing what they like, they've actually succeeded in making some very good movies and some extremely profitable ones. It'll be fascinating, Stu, to see now what Dark Phoenix is like. It will be fascinating, actually, as well as, like, the Gambit movie, etc. You know, Deadpool 2. Like, this next phase of Fox movies... I mean, Deadpool 2, I'm so down for. Dark Phoenix, I'm down for, but let's face it, Apocalypse was kind of a misfire. It was definitely lukewarm compared to Days of Future Past, you know?
Yeah, very true.
So there's a lot of interesting... It really is watching space. I'm kind of excited by the Fox franchise. I sometimes feel it doesn't get enough love in the audience because we sort of take it for granted almost because they've been around for so long. But, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think Fox, even though at times they've been very reluctant, have also kind of been quite brave, especially recently when they've started pushing out into all the TV properties as well. Stuff like Legion, I mean, it really... We've mentioned on the show before, it really was stellar TV, you know?
I mean, I think... Look, they've had some problems. Critically, they've had some problems.
Oh, sure.
They've been batting about 50-50. Like, half of these movies have been critical failures.
Exactly. I think what has helped them is that the box office lines have been pretty strong. So that helps a studio when they're like, they're starting to get confidence in their project. When you hit close to a billion with Deadpool, they're suddenly breathing a bit easier and going, okay, we're actually, I think, stumbled onto something here.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, then studios get a bit more creative. If stuff like Dark Phoenix bombs, which is a possibility in a crowded... it's possible. Then you start getting the studios getting lukewarm. That's what's going to eventually happen. I hate to be the harbinger of doom, but let's face it, we all know that movies these days are moving more and more and more towards tentpole franchises, and just right now the trend is superheroes. What will happen eventually is you'll start getting some bombs.
Absolutely. And look, right now, we haven't really warmed up to this new roster of characters.
Of X-Men. Yeah, sure. We barely got introduced.
Exactly. Like, when I say to you, we're looking at Phoenix.
Yeah.
You don't really think of...
Whatever her name is.
The new character of Phoenix.
Yeah, I know that she is, but I know who I prefer.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know.
You're not... Yeah.
She didn't give a dominating performance to a point where I was like, she's the Phoenix now. Like, Michael Fassbender, when he was Magneto, you were like, okay, he's Magneto now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he owned it. Like, James McAvoy owned the performance.
James McAvoy with Professor, yeah.
Yeah.
Those guys, absolutely, we've come to know and love them.
Yeah.
But the new versions of Phoenix, Cyclops, like, they're all a bit meh.
Yeah, I know. They're almost like...
I also don't enjoy New Beast.
I'm not a huge fan. You're talking about the, what's his name, Nicholas Bolt, whatever?
Nick Holt, yeah.
Nick Holt, got close. No, give me Kelsey Grammer any day.
Give me Kelsey Grammer.
I know J-Dog, my mate out there on the internet, he is a huge Kelsey Grammer fan.
Massive.
As he once said to me, he pitched me hard one night after a few drinks. Solo Beast movie, no sidekicks. There's a Beast fan.
With Kelsey Grammer on the helm, I'd be down
with Kelsey. I like the way James went, no sidekicks.
Yeah.
He doesn't want anyone crowding into Beast time. I always felt there'd be one man in the cinema. You know, just James.
Just James.
Multiple sessions. The big popcorn, a big smile on his face. All his dreams have come true. Now, Stu, that's fascinating, and we're going to... It's watch this space, because there's so much product coming out. Stu and I are both probably heavily invested in the X-Men, so we will definitely keep discussing this, and most importantly, reviewing and discussing it once it comes out, because we can speculate all day long about what's happening on Gambit, but yeah. I bet you Channing Tatum knows, you know, next to nothing as well. He gets scripts. It'd be interesting to know what the relationship between the studio and him is. Because he's been as connected as Ryan Reynolds has to Deadpool, but the movement's been so slow on the project. He's been very patient, really, because it's not like the guy's career's struggling.
No, exactly. I mean, he's out in the new Kingsman movie, exactly. He's doing well.
Yeah, and I mean, he had the 21 Jump Street franchise, he turns up in...
He's all over the place at the moment. He's doing really well. He's got a great name at the moment.
Exactly, and he was in, what was it, Magic Mike? And he was involved in that. He was like a producer on the Magic Mike series.
Yeah.
So he's done very well for himself, and I'm glad that he's staying connected. I like it when a guy like him, who's got a lot of stuff going on, is still staying connected to something that's obviously close to his heart.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool. That's good to see. I mean, because I know I'd just take the money and fucking run.
Of course.
I'm like, yeah, I really love Gambit, but I've just signed up for Warner's for fucking whatever, so see ya. Good luck, yeah. Good luck, Gambit. From a distance. It's a long distance, love. Now, Stu, I think the final trailer for this week in what has turned into Signal of Doom, the trailer reviews, The X-Files. I think it's season 11. I've kind of lost track. There's a new season coming out. They're halfway through filming. They released a trailer for New York Comic Con. Stu, Michelle and I did watch the last season. It was interesting. The more annoying stuff is what I always found annoying about the X-Men, the constant conspiracy that just constantly keeps on winding on with no real resolution. That's still there. There's a lot of stuff like they've got a kid now. I don't know. There was weaknesses in the last season, and it ended on a cliffhanger, which was basically a spaceship over top of them. But there was stuff to like in the new season as well. Like, Michelle and I enjoyed it overall for what it was. Part of it's that 90s nostalgia. Where are you on it? And Stu, how excited for you after seeing the trailer?
I quite enjoyed the trailer. I thought it was a pretty good cut.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big David Duchovny fan.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
I love him in pretty much everything.
He's a very good actor.
Really
good. Ever seen a movie, Stu? I'll ask you this question. Late 90s, or maybe mid... No, early 90s. Don't Tell Mum the Babysitter's Dead. Ever seen it? Okay.
I don't think so, no.
He plays the baddie. Okay. He's basically the stupid story. Like, basically the story is this. The, parents go away. Leave the kids, like it's a batch of kids, like let's say three kids and an older sister who's pushing, or maybe she's just a babysitter, yeah, who's like a 20-year-old. Okay. No, actually, no, that's not the story. The babysitter is, I'm remembering now, the babysitter is like a grandma, okay? She dies, like, bang, just natural causes, leaving the older sister in charge, okay? Then it's wacky adventures from there on in. But the bad guy is played by David Duchovny, who does a classic moment near the end where he thinks he gets his goal, but he goes, justice is served. And I always love that scene. And it's just before the X-Files hit. So it's like, if you remember the X-Files hit in about 93, around there, it's like a year before. So he's slightly younger. And I was always like, this was a hilarious performance by this guy. And then he became David Duchovny, the big star. And he's got, I mean, did you watch Californication?
I did, yeah.
Great show.
I enjoyed that.
He's got a lot of range. We also watched Aquarius. And to be honest, he is very strong in the new season, as is Scully. That relationship is the strongest thing in the season. Mm. It's complicated a bit by their personal life. I always thought it was a mistake to marry them off and have kids and stuff. I always thought that to me is the classic mistake. But shoot me down out there. I always liked it where their relationship was kind of more a work relationship with a bit of flirting than full boyfriend, girlfriend, we're married, we've got a kid, now we're not married, that kind of stuff. Where are you on it, Stu? Do you care or not care?
Not really.
Okay.
Just asking. I've never been a huge X-Files fan.
Okay. Oh, really?
I've seen a lot of the show, but...
You haven't or have?
I haven't seen a lot of it, no.
The classic X-Files is well worth a watch. Like, the classic, like, I'd say the first four seasons of the classic 90s show, really good. It struggled as it went on. Ironically, it sort of was a victim of its own success. Like, it really blew up really big, and the bigger it got, the sort of more it got addicted to its own conspiracy theory, and it became a bit less interesting.
Yeah.
The X-Files was best, in my opinion, when it was more compartmentalized, single-shot stories that featured an almost monster of the week or sort of problem of the week. You know, with a sort of mystical or supernatural spin. It was really interesting stuff. Some really good seasons and some really good episodes in the first few seasons. And they definitely tried to go for that flavor in the new series. There's definitely some really nice one-shot episodes.
Uh-huh.
So are you saying, Stuart, I mean, this is interesting. So you're not an X-Files fan, but you like Duchovny. Are you watching the new season? In season 11?
I probably wouldn't start in season 11.
Yeah, what the hell are you doing?
I'd go back and start watching the originals.
Yeah, I would recommend that. I think they're on. They were on Netflix for some time. Yeah, I would recommend it. I mean, it's a strong show. You get to season 5, and that's where I think you make the decision: how invested am I in this? You know?
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people that these new seasons that have come out in the last couple of years, it's not worth it.
It's definitely not the best X-Files out there. Like a 10-episode season. Dude, I was a hardcore fan in a sense of the first few seasons back in the 90s. Michelle was big into it, so we watched it.
Yeah.
It was fun for us. But it had plenty of critics as well.
Yeah,
for sure. You know? It has that feeling, Stu, when they reboot these things or bring stuff back, it's the classic, like, we're going to do a sequel to a movie from 12 years ago. And you're like, okay... Yes,
yeah,
but with the same people, and you're like, all right, like any excitement is just so dead.
Yeah,
like there's no one calling for this outside of the one guy in his apartment. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's me and Bad Boys 3. I'm the guy who wants it, but I don't feel there's hundreds of millions of people around the world going, "Where's Bad Boys 3?"
No, I'm pretty sure it's just you.
That's what I'm using as an example. X-Files would have had a pretty vibrant fan community due to the internet and everything, and its time place, but. I wouldn't say that this new season, the last one, was stellar. They even said in the press conference, "Oh, yeah, we know we had some problems in the last season, but this season we're really dialing in and making it back to what it was." When you have the creator of the show saying that kind of shit, you know, like, I know we had kind of a mixed response to last season.
Yeah.
You know, they really must have.
Yeah, you know it's bad. Yeah. The director's like, mixed.
Yeah, mixed. It's all bad. Stu, now, obviously, you know I like to pronounce the news, Stu, don't you? I consider myself a... Sort of, what's that classic guy? It's not David Carradine name, but it's the guy who used to do the news in the States. I can't remember his name now.
Walter Cronkite,
that's exactly what I was thinking. Hold on, Stuart. I do consider myself like that behind my little microphone at my desk now, Stu.
Yeah.
While you're relaxing in the big chair.
Need a bit of a moustache.
Now, I can grow a moustache. I am bringing up some comic news into the regular news because of how pissed off I am. Okay, now this news broke, and I was on the Into the Night site with our friends at the Moon Knight podcast. Ray, I was so fuming when this news broke that Ray himself had to say, "Dave, Slow down, big guy. Because I was kind of something like, burn the world down. I just don't care anymore. That was how I was reacting.
Oh, Dave.
Yeah. You know me, Stu. I was overreacting. Oh, Dave. That's what I'm saying. It was a Wednesday night, Stu.
Dave's on the internet on a Wednesday night. Everyone watch out.
Now, I'm going to break this news to you, and I want your take, okay? Right. So here's the news. Basically, we've all fucking gone through the saga of Captain America being a Nazi, etc., okay? We got to the end of that. Now, Stu, people in the regular Marvel Universe don't believe that Captain America went into the ice at the end of World War II to now. And if you do believe that, you're in the heavy minority and you're called an icer. I think it's the most stupid idea I've heard in a while from Marvel. And I found it just infuriating to me that this is now the scenario that Captain America finds himself in. Stu, what are your thoughts? Because I exploded, man. I was calling for Brevoort's head. I was saying, Mark Waid, you're a grandpa, give it up. At one point I said, like, it's over. I had something on my Facebook, like, imagine a world where Marvel doesn't suck. Oh, no, I can't. That kind of stuff was coming out from me on the Wednesday night. All in caps as well. I was tossing my stuff in the cot. I was tossing my toys around, man, you know?
I do remember on Thursday you sent me a screenshot of one of your many rants.
Oh, that's right.
That just ended in you going, I just vomited in my mouth.
Exactly. That was as clever as I got. It devolved from there.
Oof, Dave.
And Ray, a couple of them trying to hose me down, you know, like bring a pot of cold water in this situation. I was coming up with stuff like, what are they going to do? They can't silence me. That kind of stuff, you know. And I've calmed down since then. Luckily, we're not recording on Wednesday nights anymore, Stu, because let me tell you, I was tearing it apart.
Oh,
I was getting the heart problem. Where are you? Are you as enraged as I am? You don't look as enraged. You're kind of sleepy.
I'm not quite as enraged as you, Dave. Got to admit, I'm not quite up there.
Okay. But it sucks. Would you agree? I pitched it to Dion. He hated it. I pitched it to MJ. She goes, it just sounds like the stupidest thing ever. Everyone I'm mentioning has said it's stupid. Where are you?
I think it's pretty stupid, but...
Yeah.
I don't know, it's not enough to burn the world.
Maybe that was just the mood I was in.
Maybe that was just the mood.
But for me, though, it summed up, okay, and I was chatting online about this to Chuck Dixon. I said, it's something fundamental that they're not getting about Captain America. Like, dude, I feel like putting a fucking poster of Captain America up with the Stars and Stripes, killing a fucking Nazi. That's how I feel right now, because I want to get back to the basics of what Captain America is. Ed Brubaker knew who Captain America was. Okay, like, we knew who Captain America was. In the movies, we know who Captain America is. In Marvel Comics right now, we have a situation where people are being called ISIS, dude, which is Marvel speak for truther, you know? Like, it's like those morons who think about the moon landings didn't exist, you know?
Yeah.
The conspiracy theory. They're trying to twist it around now. And remember what Brevoort said? This is what I found an annoying comment from him. And I would actually ask him this question in an interview. When you said, we pissed off the right people about Captain America being a Nazi, what did you mean? That's the question I'd ask you, because I still don't understand what he meant by that. Like, I was pissed off, but why am I the right people? Because I'm certainly not right-wing, okay? I was offended. So why was I the right person to be offended? And this just infuriates me as a stupid idea. Like, I don't... And it's like, is it a political point, Stu? Am I missing something? Because I can't quite see what the point is again. I'm like, what is the point of the story? If there's an agenda, what is the agenda?
I've got no idea, Dave.
Okay.
I've got nothing for you.
So, okay, so I'm still throwing my little fists around in fury, aren't I?
Dave's still pumping away over there, getting himself worked up. He's going to have trouble sleeping tonight.
But a choke to
whether
death.
Choking or not, he's going to have trouble sleeping.
Imagine
he's working himself up into a right.
Imagine if it was a forced choke, like Michelle or something. She's pissed off with me, you know, by my figure. She's a little
just forced choke.
Not enough to kill me, just to trouble me. You know, that's terrible. Michelle would never do that. But who knows?
She doesn't have the force.
Maybe. Oh, God, imagine if I did, because I would be force lightning all day long. Jesus Christ, I would throw some force lightning in the queue for too long. See you later.
I'm picturing you just force pushing people just out of the way. Oh, you set that line, my child.
Just people just flinging themselves.
People just jumping out of lines.
Yeah. I'm just like barreling again to the front. I don't know, Stu, but I'm calling on people, you know, Michael, the normal people who like to write into the show. I'm more than happy to do like a dialogue on this. I'm going to chat about it to Mike Barron tonight. We've got Mike Barron on the show tonight, so I'm going to interview him. And I know Mike doesn't stay in touch with modern comics, and God bless him, because sometimes I wish I didn't. I'm going to ask him about this. I'm going to pitch it to him and go, Mike, what's your take? And it'd be interesting to hear a guy like him who I don't think cares about, like, you know, what's happening 2017, you know, October, Marvel Comics, just to get his take as someone who, you know, is over the top of it. Because I really do believe, Stu, that, like, we have lost touch, or Marvel have lost touch with what fundamentally appeals about one of their key characters, like Captain America. Just like I think they lost touch with what happens with Spider-Man, and they finally brought Spider-Man back. That's why I put him in the show this week, to being Peter Parker down on his luck from the tech mogul. I think sometimes we fundamentally have lost touch with the basics of these characters, what makes them tick. We're putting them in impossible situations for too long, and they just don't work.
Yeah.
That's my take. And I will actually, you know what, I'm actually going to put a comment out there and invite Tom Brevoort onto the show. And if he chooses to accept that offer, I make it in good faith, and I like a lot of Marvel products, so it won't be a witch hunt. But I will ask him a couple of questions that might be some harder balls if he comes into bat into the cage, you know? I'm more than happy. I mean, I like a lot of Tom Brevoort stuff that he's been editor of, so I'm more than happy to go through that. But I'll also position a few of these questions about Captain America, so I'll make that comment right now, Stu. What's your comments?
I'm not Tom Brevoort.
No, I'm saying, no, what's your comment?
I'm not jumping into that ring. I'm out. Tag out.
So you're not going to be part of the panel?
This is getting too real, Dave.
You're not going to be part of the panel, Stu?
I'll be there, yeah, sure.
Okay, Stu, that's all I ask.
Yeah.
Dude, it's over the internet, man. Like, at the end of the day...
We can do good cop, bad cop.
I also don't 100% know if he's going to jump in, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, the single, we're shining fucking bright.
Oh, absolutely, but there's a 0% chance that he's listening.
Well, he might not listen, but I will reach out to him. I'll reach out to him through Twitter and all that kind of stuff, and through his representative. Why not?
I'd respond through Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, fuck it.
If I had Dave ranting online... About ISIS.
I'm not gonna.
He's been ranting about ISIS for 3 days, and he goes, "Hey Tom Brevoort, you want to come to the show?" I'd be like, "Oh yeah, absolutely."
But where do I sign up? Where is his show?
Where do I sign up?
Fly you out to Australia.
Where's my appearance fee? Yeah.
Well, like, oh, we may have to do the Marvel office over there. Can you just pay for us the flyover?
You pay for us.
Pay for us for a 20-minute witch hunt.
Yeah.
He shuts it down after the second minute. Anyway, so there's that. There's the Captain America ISIS situation. Obviously, anyone who wants to jump in with their opinions of whatever variety, please give me your thoughts.
Are there other opinions on this, though?
Everyone I've spoken to, Stu, and I've canvassed actually quite widely. Like, I've spoken to a few people who don't read comics, who just know the movie. I've spoken to, like, hardcore comic fans. You know, I've sampled quite a few. Everyone has said it's stupid. Like, everyone.
I don't see how there is another opinion.
Yeah, like I don't get it. I don't get how they thought, this is the winner. After we've made... This is what annoys me. After we've made everyone go through the trials of hell with him being a Nazi, like, whether you like the story or not, that's what it was. It was like the ultimate depth of the character arc. And you brought him back and he's now Cap again. Why is this the first thing you do again? It just is odd to me. But... Hey, I get that's the story they greenlit. So then that means they get the criticism or the praise that it warrants. Like that's how the industry works. You don't just get a pass and everyone just goes, "Oh yeah, it's Captain America, that's fantastic." Like no, you get a critical review. That's what happens when you produce entertainment. You know, rant over, I guess. Jesus. Anyway, in other news, I think I was quite balanced, too, considering you should have seen me on Wednesday night. I can't charge you out of the show. You won't believe what happened. And she's like, what?
Will I?
Will I? And then she was like, it's dumb. Like, I don't know what more you want from me. And I'm like, that's enough. Charge back in. And I was using caps on Into the Night because I had a kind of like a forum, you know, like people were responding. They were talking, you know, just kind of barged in their conversation. Enough about Moon Knight, what about this? And they're like, yeah, it's annoying, Dave. You seem real worked up. I sure am. And Ray's like,
everyone around Dave's just like, okay, Dave.
Ray's like, I think everyone's got the message, Dave. Good. I fucking hope so.
Dave's just yelling at people from a street corner.
My little, those people at the station.
Yes. Handing out little flyers and brochures. Handing out
a pamphlet. Yeah. Can you believe Marvel did this? They're like, what's Marvel? Yeah. What? I don't know.
Why are you talking to me?
Yeah. Oh, God. Anyway, Stuart. Turning to some CW news. John Constantine joins the Legends of Tomorrow cast. I actually watched the show Legends of Tomorrow with Michelle, so I'm actually kind of excited about this.
Nice.
Yeah. Did you watch the Constantine show?
No, it
actually wasn't too bad. The guy who played Constantine was perfect. The show had some problems, but you know when someone gives a perfect performance, he did. And I honestly think I'm interested to see him in Legends of Tomorrow. I think he filmed some Arrow as well. So yep. he's turned up in Arrow. So he's done a little bit of work since he's been in since they've cancelled the Constantine show. Now, Stu, here's something that I wondered if you were interested in. Are you this? Because I've never played this Settlers of Catan game. Have you ever played it?
I have like 5 copies.
Oh, really? So you've played a lot of it?
I've played a lot of it.
Oh, dude, I'll pass this over to you because it's being announced as a film adaptation in the works.
Yeah, I have no idea how they're going to adapt this into a film. This doesn't make any sense as a film. So there's an adaptation in the works. So Catan's been a board game around since the mid-90s.
Sure, yep.
Strategy game. It's based on farming.
Right.
You kind of farm resources, build houses.
And it's a board game?
It is a board game, yeah.
Okay. Would it take it off his desk? Or is it bigger?
It's not that big. It's kind of a circular-ish board, maybe 40 centimeters across. It's not massive.
Is it fun? Like, is it a game? Like, is it like a four-person game? Like, Michelle and myself, you and someone else, could we play it or what?
Yeah, you'd play four-person. And you're just kind of racing towards an end game, which is getting enough points to win.
Yeah, okay. It sounds cool.
It's a fun little strategy game. It's good to play with a few friends.
Sure.
But there's no characters. There's no backstory. There's none of the things that...
It's almost like they've got an IP, though. It says here 25 million copies in nearly 40 languages, and someone's gone, oh, greenlight a movie.
I mean, it's certainly insanely popular.
Okay.
But there are other majorly popular board games that actually have characters and stories.
I play Munchkin with Michelle when we can. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but
Munchkin's fun.
Munchkin's fun. Yeah, we've got to have you over, man. We've got to have
the Marvel Munchkin.
Oh, have you got the Marvel Munchkin set?
Yeah.
You can bring it in. We've got the normal set and the Apocalypse set. And I think Apocalypse and no, we've got the Cthulhu set, the Apocalypse set, and the normal set. It's awesome. So, dude, if we brought in your Marvel set as well, it'd be fucking good times.
It's good fun.
Yeah, we've got to have you over, Stu.
But see, that would make a better movie.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, for sure.
That I would understand.
Yeah, this feels more like, even Warcraft, it's easier to make a movie because of all the lore.
You've got characters and backstories. Yeah. And things
so
like
this
that.
Is just like little people and you're moving it all around
it's
and
not
stuff.
Not even people, you're just building houses I'm thinking and you're it's building like, roads.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds boring. But, for a movie.
Like, pitching it as a movie, it sounds terribly boring.
I mean, please.
I don't really get this.
Please fucking tell me that it won't be a movie of people playing it, because that will fucking kill me. You know, like.
Yeah, I feel like Jumanji should be one and done for that.
Oh, can you imagine, Stu? Oh, Stu, we're going to play Settlers of Catan. And then, sucked into this world.
That's awful.
Yeah. Oh, my fucking God. Just put some Smurfs in there as well and kill me now. I mean, that said, if I'm at a studio, that's kind of the idea I'd do. So, I will say that. Just to inject some.
Can I make money? Yeah, cash in.
Yeah,
cash it in.
turning of other movies that just are endlessly going on, Bride of Frankenstein's reboot has been pulled from Universal's schedule. Not a surprise considering the Mummy's underperformance. Apparently, Javier Bardem is still committed. Angelina Jolie less so.
Yeah, this is not unexpected news, is it?
Yeah.
And the Stark Universe is dying.
It is dying. It's dying. It's going.
One movie, and it's
the Mummy actually achieved her goal. She killed it. She won.
Oh, man.
I don't know, dude.
Can you imagine signing on names like Javier Bardem?
Apparently, no, dude, I was listening to Collider. Apparently, neither Bardem or Angelina Jolie have signed final terms, which is even weirder.
Javier Bardem hadn't signed them yet?
No, they have not. It's very close. But, like, she hasn't signed it. They're not signed
Angelina,
to
I get, because we haven't seen her attach or anything. But Javier was doing, like, photo shoots.
That photo shoot with all of them in the room was not... They weren't in the room. That was all Photoshop. They weren't actually in the room. You know the thing with...
I mean,
Tom Cruise, Johnny Depp was there, he was there, some other people were there. They weren't in the room. It was all a Photoshop thing. It's just stupid, dude. Like... This is... People talk about, like, you've got to make a good movie before you build a universe. These guys built the universe before the movie even came out. Not didn't even really build the universe.
Their first movie was shit.
Yeah, it was terrible. I never made it to the end. I gave it a chance. We tried to battle through it, and it was genuinely bad. And I love Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
It was just a bad movie.
Well, this just shows you the stark contrast between that and Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Pacific Rim, which is doing it right.
Yeah. Hey, at least they even come out with a fucking good trailer.
Yeah.
Whereas,
released two movies. One is a sequel.
Yes.
There are no spin-offs, tie-ins, other characters. Just make two good movies.
Yeah.
See where it goes.
I've got to say that honestly, Universal Monsters are so rich in their history. There's so many good classic Universal monsters. Here's an idea. Why don't you just make, if you're determined to milk it, make like an old school monster movie and just make that. Make like a werewolf movie. Make like a Dracula movie. Do it in the old style. Just do something a bit more contained. If you, that's Stu, that's if they think they can monetize it and make it happen.
Look, I feel like you could monetize these properties. There's some brilliant properties in there.
Mm.
But you take some of their biggest. You go for like the Wolfman, or you go for Dracula.
And don't make Wolfman like the Benicio del Toro Wolfman, which was like really serious. Like, give me a fucking break. It make it more fun. You know, like, make it a horror movie. We don't need to get to the inner workings of the Wolfman. We get it. Did you ever see Wolf with Jack Nicholson?
No.
It's interesting. but it's not terrible. Jack Nicholson plays the werewolf. And it's got Michelle Pfeiffer. It's a misstep. It's a misstep. But it's at least interesting. But my point was that I think they've got it. I would try to go throwback to the old style. Like, do a retro-y kind of thing.
Yeah.
Inject the word fun into it, you know? Fun and thrills and horror. And, you know, I don't know, maybe that's something to go into. But the fact is, like, Bride of Frankenstein, give me a fucking break. You know, seriously.
I mean, Frankenstein, yeah.
Yeah.
But you got to go with a big name to start it off.
Well, I assume Javier Bardem was playing Frankenstein, or the Frankenstein monster. Is he not? What is Bride of Frankenstein? Is she marrying the monster? Or the doctor?
Yeah, she's marrying the monster.
Okay. Is she a monster as well?
I think so, yeah. I think they made...
So I don't even know, right?
They made her.
Okay, yeah, that's I'm thinking that's the black and white stuff I've seen, because we only know it from black and whites from like the 50s or 40s or something. Like, we're going so far back that it you can sort of see that they've got no idea. Apparently they made a comment like...
But they're in the perfect scenario in that they can change pretty much anything they wanted and there's not going to be public outcry.
No.
If you change the origin story to the Bride of Frankenstein, no one's going to be screaming at you. Exactly. You've ruined it.
Yeah.
Because, what, 10 people can remember it?
The original audience is all dead. You know, they are. They're dead. And, like, this is... You're a new generation. Do something with it. But I think you've got to focus on fun and you've got to focus on horror. You know? Like, I would almost do it like the rides and stuff like that. Like, I don't know if it's... I'm not thinking that it deserves a whole universe. I'm thinking, like, these one-shot really cool monster movies and seeing how they go.
Oh, yeah. You do two or three monster movies, and if they work, tie them together. Throw them all in one movie. And
that's what I think Universal did back in the day.
Maybe then you can have a shared universe.
Yeah, I think that's what they did back in the day. You'd have Vampire Dracula teaming up with like Wolfman or whatever, and the Mummy. I think that's how they did it. You can sort of see there's potential. Like, I will say this, the Mummy movies with Brendan Fraser are far, far, far better than the Tom Cruise Mummy.
Oh, for sure.
A lot more fun. And that was like, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Jesus. Anyway, so watch this space. I'm certainly not feeling it, but, you know, they'll have to convince me. Now, Stu, Ridley Scott had more to say. He says the next Alien movie may not have aliens. I mean, well, screw seeing that then.
I mean, I feel like he's just using the word alien wrong.
Mm.
What do you mean? He says the next Alien movie. Because, I mean, he's talking about a sequel to...
Alien Covenant.
Covenant, right?
Yeah. That had Alien in it, though.
Another Prometheus kind of style movie.
Well, Alien Covenant was a sequel to Prometheus.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So he's already said he's going to focus more on the AI.
Which I hate.
Which, yeah, I don't like. I kind of like the character, David.
Sure. Yeah.
Cool character, but not enough to hold a whole movie without aliens for me.
Oh, come on. If there's no aliens in Alien, I'll be fucking annoyed. That's actually something where I'll be like, oh, I'm not going to see it then, Ridley. That's stupid.
People were complaining there wasn't enough alien in Covenant.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton.
There was enough for me. Like,
I enjoyed Alien Covenant. I honestly did enjoy it. I thought it was so enjoyable. Yeah.
I thought it was better than Prometheus.
I'd go Covenant over Prometheus, for sure. If I had to watch one of them right now, yeah.
Yeah.
But
if you said to me, we're going to do that movie again, but there's not going to be any aliens.
I'm out. Fuck it. I don't care.
Yes, or no.
I'm like, I want the next one to have more aliens. My favourite Alien movie is Aliens. With James Cameron. It's my favourite, easily. Not even close. I know everyone's like, oh, but the original's the whole thing. I've seen the original multiple times. It's a good movie, but I prefer Aliens. Yeah. Oh, shoot me now, internet. You know, Jesus Christ. Ridley Scott's a really, really good director. But I also, Stu, can I finish this comment off? There's no way the studio is going to greenlight an Aliens movie without aliens. It's just not going to happen. Alien Covenant underperformed, okay, at the box office. So that's already put... Remember Ridley Scott made the comment, he goes, oh, this is going to challenge Star Wars? No.
What?
Yeah, he made that comment. Ridley Scott's 82, dude. A great, great director, but he's lost focus on the reality.
No fucking clue what's going on.
Yeah, dude, and then after that comment, that little bombshell he put out there that it's going to challenge Star Wars, it underperformed, and it's struggling to get a sequel right now.
Yeah.
So there's no way the studio would release an Aliens movie without aliens in it. Aliens are going to be... If there's a new Aliens movie, aliens will be all over it. It'll be aliens fighting Marines again, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
Like... I swear to God, like, I've never been more certain of anything in my life that there'll either be no alien movie, okay, or there'll be an alien movie with stacks of aliens. And Ridley Scott's ridiculous comments about AI will just not hold any water whatsoever.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. I'm a bit fiery today, Stu. Now, oh, we've actually got a topical one here. We should have mentioned this at the top because this is quite a serious issue. In the light of the Harvey Weinstein scandal, which has rocked Hollywood over the last week, Stu, following the expose article, I believe it was New York Times, maybe Hollywood Reporter, Ben Affleck found himself in some uncomfortable hot water as some old videos resurfaced. I had a couple of listeners point this out to me, actually. He apologized to former One Tree Hill star Hilary Burton for groping. I believe she's the wife of Jeffrey Dean Morgan, for groping her during a TRL appearance in 2001. And also, Stu, and this is sort of more amusing, in Canada in 2004, he's promoting Jersey Girl, where he's extremely flirtatious with the hostess, encouraging her to take off her top, mocks her disabled in a French accent, and supposedly was drunk during the interview. I researched the article, Stu, and interestingly, the hostess has very much embraced the interviews she's done with Affleck, which have always been very flirtatious, and it's a major part of her own social media promotion. I believe she owns some porn site in Canada and stuff, and like it's a huge part of her sell that she's got this relationship with Ben Affleck, which is always a bit risque. Welcome to 2017. I don't know. I'm still watching Justice League. Stu, where are you? but please don't be icky, Ben Affleck. Please. I mean, I forgive him. Like, he groped the girl back in 2001. That's wrong. And Harvey Weinstein, I am 1,000,000,000% against. He deserves to rot in hell.
Oh, absolutely right. Like, yeah, they're saying he's going to rehab for
some reason. Oh, fuck him. Fuck him. Like,
he doesn't need rehab. He needs jail.
Yeah, why?
This is not sex addiction. This is sex crime.
Can I just, brief comment. We should have put this on top of the show. The stuff about Harvey Weinstein, I mean, dude, we're not Hollywood insiders. I think
we're up to, 25 separate actors and actresses.
So many people, like, just, it's awful. It's just like, it's every cliche you've ever thought about Hollywood, and it's just so exemplified by this one person. It's just awful. He deserves jail, man. Like, how, I can't believe he won't be, someone will be investigating some rape charges, surely.
I mean, I'm sure there will be, but...
I mean, sexual assault? Well, he's masturbating in front of people? Like, I mean, that's a crime. Isn't it?
Yeah, it is, Dave.
I'm like, yes. Give me a break. Like, just that in itself is a crime.
I think the problem is he's got money.
Yeah, he's got cash, yeah.
In a lot of these systems, you can get away with a lot.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Look, I get it, and it's difficult to, put in front of a jury and stuff like that, but the sheer quantity of people... And the number of actresses.
Oh, no, there's no question he's guilty. There is zero question that he's guilty.
Yeah.
And there's zero question that he deserves to be in a cell.
Oh, yeah.
But he won't ever see the inside of a cell.
Yeah. No,
he has too much money.
I'll get a little bit dark. It wouldn't be surprised me if he killed himself. It really wouldn't. If Harvey Weinstein kills himself inside the next year, I'll be the least surprised person in the world.
No, he's got too much money.
Probably you're right.
Honestly, they're never going to... Like, he's going to end up under house arrest or something like that in a giant fucking mansion. It's...
Yeah, it's not going to be tough for him. I mean, the guy's had so many fucking hits.
Exactly.
Yeah, now he's a...
He's one of the most powerful...
He's what you call a total sexual predator. And I'm amazed that it's only taken until now. Apparently, they were working on that story for a year. They really put the nuts and bolts of that story together. They must have gone, shit, we've really got something here. Yeah. Like this guy. Because apparently it was an open secret in Hollywood. But anyway, look, stepping away from that, because that's beyond the pale, his behavior. Affleck's behavior is a little more like it's 12 years ago. He's apologized. I can't sit here and pretend that I'm not going to go see Justice League. You know? Where are you on it, Stu?
Yeah, I'm still seeing Justice
League. Yeah, okay. I mean, look, it's never nice.
To be honest, I don't know why this even registers as a story.
Because, right, well, because Matt Damon and Affleck had, like, Good Will Hunting producer in Weinstein's company and have been associated with Weinstein. So it came out in...
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a single major actor Kevin in
Smith.
Hollywood...
Kevin Smith.
...that hasn't worked with Weinstein.
Quentin Tarantino. Dude, the names I could list. The amount of
big name stars that have worked with Weinstein at some stage in their career is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's many.
I think you're honestly hard-pressed to find someone that hasn't.
Yeah.
So why they've picked on someone like Ben Affleck?
Well, Rose McGowan on Twitter, who settled an alleged rape claim with Harvey Weinstein, came after Affleck on Twitter and told him to go fuck himself or something as well, which blew it up even more. You know, so, like, she's been very vocal. Look, dude, I'm the last person in the world who's going to stand up against anyone who's been a rape victim and sexual assault victim. It's an absolutely heinous crime. And Harvey Weinstein is a fucking piece of shit.
Absolutely.
I mean, frankly, I'll be brutally honest. He's a guy who he deserves to be spat on in the street. I'll put it that much. That's literally... He will be the pariah now. Well, fuck him. He deserves to be. That's why they invented the word pariah. That literally, he should be in the dictionary, a picture of him. Because that is his behavior... And his ridiculous apology was like, oh, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, but this was normal. Fuck you. You know, I was born in 1974, Stu, and believe you me, I've never done anything like this prick. You know what I mean? Like, it's called being raised well and having some fucking some system of values, some common sense even, to not do these kind of things. And he manipulated so many actresses when they were right in the beginning of their careers. I guarantee you, like, it'd be interesting to see if they're all over age. I 100% don't believe they're all overage. Because he's getting so many, like, very gorgeous actresses right at the start of their careers to break in. It's literally the old school casting couch. And it's just sickening. I don't know. I mean,
everyone's in agreement about that.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what the fuck is Ben Affleck doing in this war?
Dude,
he made a mistake 12 years ago, which he apologized for.
I don't want to connect this to Affleck.
I don't see why Ben Affleck's name should be dragged through the mud with Weinstein.
It's by association.
I think pretty much every actor has had one or two moments in their career when they've done an interview and they've said or done something that they regret.
Yeah.
99% of them have apologized.
And Affleck, to his credit, has already apologized on this issue.
So. They apologize and they move on.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like in this case, it wasn't 100% Ben Affleck's fault.
Mm.
Like, it sounds like this interviewer was kind of...
Oh, no, there's two separate incidents, Stu.
The one he's in hot water for,
he definitely wasn't the wrong. The one he apologized for, he wasn't the wrong. He groped his chick, and it wasn't good. The one 3 years later in Canada was a totally different scenario.
Yeah.
Totally different. It's two separate scenarios. The one he's apologized for, I think he's openly in the wrong. There's video footage. He did it, man. You know, and he's apologized for it, and it's kind of like move on. Sometimes you got. Sometimes an apology is enough. I think if it's enough for the victim, it's enough for me, and we've moved on from that scenario.
I think in this scenario, intent is a massive part in this, and I don't think Ben Affleck had any kind of.
No, I think he was
clowning around, man. Exactly right.
It's still
the wrong act. He apologized for it. He did everything right.
It's a dumb move, frankly. If I'm his agent, I'd be like, it's a fucking dumb move. What are you doing? You're on fucking national TV, Ben Affleck. Yeah. I don't care that you're Ben Affleck. It's still stupid. It's even more stupid, in fact, because, you know, you're a major star.
You apologize and move on, though. Yeah. A lot of this is intent. I don't think he ever intended to cause any...
No. Well, I agree with this,
Stu. Any problems, anything wrong with this actress?
Look, it only came out this week, man, because of all this other stuff. So, look, there will be repercussions through the industry that will be felt, I'm sure, there's more than one person scrambling now to put together a statement because they've been so associated with Weinstein. It's not just Affleck and Matt Damon who've been in hot water.
Yeah.
Plenty of people in Hollywood. Hillary Clinton was a major receiver of sponsorships from Weinstein. You know what I mean? He's associated with the liberal elite. Like, literally, that's what he is.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard Hillary Clinton come out in the last couple of days and have a statement on it.
Yeah.
And
that's an uncomfortable situation for everyone involved.
Yeah.
And really, it reflects on one guy who should be incarcerated. Now, Stu, turning away from that kind of topic, which was pretty full on, I've actually got a lighter topic and probably one of my favourite news items. We actually delayed it from last week, but I love it so much I'm resurrecting it for this week. Jim Carrey was recounting his experience working with Tommy Lee Jones on the set of Batman Forever in the 90s. As Jim Carrey explained, he met Jones at a restaurant before they worked on the movie together. He says, I went over and said, hey, Tommy, how you doing? And the blood just drained from his face like he'd been thinking about me 24 hours a day. It was the biggest scene. It was before the biggest scene we have together in the movie. The blood just drained away from his face. He started shaking and he got up. And he must have been in mid-kill me fantasy or something. He went to hug me and said, I hate you. I really don't like you. I said, gee, man, what's the problem? I pulled up a chair, which probably wasn't smart. And he said, I cannot sanction your buffoonery. I love that. I love it, man. Like, and frankly,
this just sounds perfect Tommy Lee Jones, doesn't it?
He would have been so over it. Can you imagine? Like,
Jim Carrey. I can't imagine working with Jim Carrey. Like, he just seems so over the top in the best of times. But when he was playing the Riddler in that movie, that would have been so painful to be around.
Jim Carrey would have been at peak Jim Carrey 24/7. He was as hot as you get as an actor in that period. He was coming off Ace Ventura 1, 2, The Mask. He was hot as anything. He was a huge star.
Yeah, and his like wacky overacting style was working for him at the time.
It was working for him, and he certainly didn't change it.
Man, it would have been annoying to work with him, though.
And Tommy Lee Jones, not a guy who suffers fools gladly.
No.
Apparently, he had a lot to say to Robert Downey Jr. on the set, I believe, of the sequel to The Fugitive. If you remember, they did a sequel to The Fugitive. I forget what it's called. But anyway, Robert Downey Jr. at that time was facing jail time for drug offences in the 90s, but was filming that thing, and Tommy Lee Jones wouldn't even speak to him. He was just that disgusted. This guy was like a... Because at that point, RDJ hadn't experienced like the whole rehab thing, you know, like, and became the RDJ that we love. I loved him, frankly, as an actor, but he was having real problems. And Tommy Lee Jones was just... He's just not a forgiving guy. You know, he's a man of stone, basically. But I cannot sanction your buffoonery. That should almost be the episode title. Do you agree, Stu?
Yeah, I think that's a good call.
It's just too good. Now, Stu, what about drama on the Fast and Furious franchise as Rock and Jason Statham split off into a spin-off, and one of the other actors, I'm not sure what his name is it Tyrell or something?
Tyrese.
He's just having massive shots at The Rock, and he's saying hashtag not family, hashtag you know Dwayne Johnson. he's just real bitter about it because, like, the Fast and Furious sequel has been delayed a year while the Statham and Rock spin-off goes out a year before. And so there's a little split in the ranks because if you recall, Vin Diesel and Rock were almost came to blows during the filming of the last movie.
There's always been a little bit of tension there with The Rock basically coming in and stealing the thunder.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Statham coming in later.
Sure.
And really pushing out the original cast.
And who doesn't like Statham, like, frankly? I love him.
Oh, I love these guys. But, like, neither of these two guys are part of the original Fast and Furious.
No, they came in, like, five or six. They did to me. They came in
halfway through the show, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm up to that now, guys. Don't worry about it. So, there's always been a bit of tension between the original cast, which is, like, Vin Diesel, Paul Walker.
Yeah, Michelle Rodriguez.
Michelle Rodriguez and Tyrese, who was in the second one.
I like Tyrese, and also Ludacris is in it as well.
Yeah, Ludacris also started in the second one.
So Ludacris and Tyrese, I believe, had an offer pitched at them for a spin-off series. He alluded to that in his Instagram. Well, when I say alluded, he said it. Yeah,
which basically flopped.
Yeah.
And instead they offered The Rock and Statham their own spin-off movie.
Which
the two newest comers to
And is a lot more enticing for audience members. Like,
oh, yeah.
Hmm.
And this basically pushed the Fast and Furious 9 back to 2020.
That's a long way off.
It is a long way off.
Especially for a series that's so hot. You know, it's pretty hot, the Fast and Furious franchise.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, no, I can understand his annoyance. I'm sort of surprised they're so open about it, but that tells me that, like, they're really splitting. Like, there's no love lost between The Rock and the former cast members. You know, so it potentially looks like there might be two parallel series now.
Yeah.
You know. Kind of interesting that these guys get on Twitter and Instagram and stuff are so public about their grievances, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Tyrese is just hitting hard all over Twitter.
Sure.
He's just laying bombs down on Rock. he's tweeting things like, well done on making the series about you.
Wow.
Just blatantly.
Jesus Christ, you've got to have some balls to, like, go after Rock in that fashion.
I know. Dwayne Johnson, who is...
I sure wouldn't.
Yeah, but he's the highest paid actor in Hollywood right now. He's the most popular guy in Hollywood.
And he's a big guy, too, as I'm saying as well, like physically.
I mean, everyone in this series is pretty big.
Yeah, but I know, if Tyrese is the guy I'm thinking of, like, I know who I'm taking in a fight. that's what I'm saying to you. Would you be throwing bombs on The Rock if he was, like, within fucking distance of you? I wouldn't.
Dude, he's a big guy, but it's a fucking pussy. Yeah, I'd take him.
Jesus. Really?
He did WWE. He's never thrown a punch in his life.
Okay. Well, all right. He looks big, I'm also a pussy, man, when it comes to fighting. Her. Yeah?
Look at the guy. Look at what he's done in his resume.
Films.
Exactly. And
wrestling.
Yeah, where he's not...
I get you. He's not a street fighter. Is that your point?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but are you a street fighter? That's my point. I'm like, if I'm a street fighter, I'd be a bit more like... I don't know. I hate...
Like, if I'm looking at the cast of, like, Fast and Furious...
Yeah.
...versus the cast of The Expendables...
Right.
...where there's a good 20-year age gap between them, I'm sure. Putting my money on The Expendables.
Yeah, I think someone every like day of the week. Stallone, I mean, you know, or yeah, Chuck Norris or something, like...
All of those guys can kick The Rock's ass. No,
or the fucking Jet Li, I'd be happy to take. Yeah, against The Rock.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. I'd back Jet Li in that fight.
Randy Couture, I think, could... beat all of them.
Who's Randy Couture?
He's in Expendables. He's the bald guy, white guy.
Oh yeah, he's an MMA fighter, isn't he?
Yeah, world champion, like three times over.
I'd take him in the fight for sure. Yeah.
Or
for
Terry Crews, big black guy.
Yeah.
Massive guy, he hits hard.
Okay, yeah. Okay, as long as I've got punching power, I'm okay. I like what we're doing here. This kind of like, this is interesting. I would like to get some cage matches going.
Cage matches going.
Fucking interesting. Dude,
honestly, Fast and Furious versus Expendables.
Yeah.
It's a walkover.
Where is Stallone for you? Is he a puncher, really?
I don't think.
Like, no, he's more an actor who... I mean, he's old as hell now as well.
He's known for his action movies, but he's like Arnie.
Has Stallone lost a lot of... Because when he came out to Australia a few years ago, he was still big. But in Creed, it looked like he dropped weight. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, he has dropped some weight. Yeah. A lot of it's just muscle mass. He can't maintain that anymore. He's...
Okay.
Same as Arnie.
Yeah.
Like, Arnie's still a big guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's no longer like...
But, I mean, I don't blame him. Once you're hitting 70, you know, come on. You got to give this guy a bit of a pass.
It's not saying blame anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a bad thing.
That's the thing. I don't know, but I would have thought...
I'd be worried if they weren't losing weight.
But, Stu, from what I... little, I'm not a wrestling guy, but from what I know, they put up with a fair amount of pain, those wrestlers, dude. It's not easy.
Well, yeah, but it's basically like a dance routine.
Okay.
Like they rehearse it. It's all safe. Okay. They practice lifting and throwing each other. Yeah. Like it is basically a dance routine.
Okay.
Like they know what's happening.
Sure. Okay. Well, all right. Anyway, even in terms of... Okay, forget about the physical, because I don't think the chances of Rock like physically assaulting this guy are high.
No, there's never going
to
be a physical...
In terms of your career, I still don't know if it's the smartest move to go after someone on Instagram. That's just my opinion.
For Tyrese, it is, because he is known for nothing other than these movies.
Yeah, he needs it.
If he can attack the
Rock... I like him in the movies, though. If it's the guy I'm thinking of, I'm never sure who's ludicrous and who's him. Is he... Like, I just don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know. Like, I like both of them, though. In the movie.
I feel like if you're Tyrese right now, hitting The Rock is the smartest thing he can do, because The Rock is so much bigger than he is.
Sure.
He's only going to make news for himself.
Yeah. Make some waves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And people are talking about it.
Maybe
people never talk about him other than two weeks before and after a movie comes out.
Get into him. And he needs this, doesn't he? This is his career. This is his career.
He needs some kind of publicity to get into any other franchise.
I hear. There was a lot of speculation that when Vin Diesel and Rock were doing it, it was actually leading up to a WWE match. Like it was whatever you call it in. They were sort of putting heat on their own beef. That was literally like a lot of speculation. But I think it was a case of Vin Diesel's got a huge ego himself. And as we just said, like, he came after Rock, you know?
But I feel like at this point it's just The Rock is such a megastar at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Going after him is just an easy way to get a few clicks.
Gotcha. Interesting.
It's clickbait more than anything else.
It's clickbait, yeah. It's keeping the Fast and Furious name in the sort of light.
It's keeping his name alive. It's keeping Fast and Furious name alive.
Exactly. Now, Stu, we just spoke about Stallone. He's now directing Creed 2.
I don't know if I love it.
No, he didn't. Yeah, well, he didn't direct Creed 1. Did he direct Rocky? Or did he write the screenplay?
He wrote the screenplay.
Okay. He's directed before, though, I believe, Stallone. He may have directed one of the Rockies, I think.
I can almost guarantee you that he's directed Rocky.
I think he directed the first Expendables. I think. I could be wrong, but I think. He's certainly directed before. I was a bit surprised by this, though, because I thought they were sort of writing Stallone out of the franchise, but he's now directing, so...
I mean, his character may not be in there anymore.
Sure.
Rocky Balboa. I mean, he was just playing the...
mentor.
Yeah, the kind of coach.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's interesting. So as a director, he did Rambo. He did Rocky Balboa.
Rambo, what, First Blood?
No, Rambo, original.
Well, First Blood's the original, then Rambo's the sequel.
Sorry, just Rambo.
Oh, you know what that is? That's the film from the early 2000s, the one...
Yeah, 2008.
So technically Rambo 4. Okay.
Yeah, and then he did Rocky 2, 3, 4, and Balboa.
Oh, okay.
So he did most of the Rocky.
He did a lot of Rockies then. Oh, he's done some good Rockies.
He didn't
do
the first one.
Okay. But Rocky 2 is a good movie. Rocky 3 is a good movie.
Yep.
4, and I like Rocky Balboa a lot.
Yeah.
It was a good movie.
So he did that, and he's done The Expendables.
Okay.
So he's done a few...
Oh, look, Stallone knows what he's doing.
It's not massive, like 10 film films under his belt.
It's solid, though, and it's connected with stuff that he knows.
Yeah, exactly. It's in the universe that he knows really well.
Yeah.
I mean, with Creed, it was Coogler that directed Creed.
Right.
Who I really like. And he moved on to do Black Panther.
I was going
to
say, yeah, the guy who's doing Black Panther. Yeah,
Ryan Coogler.
Okay.
So he's directed Black Panther now.
Right.
Look, I feel like as long as you've got a stunning cast, like you've got Michael B. Jordan and Creed.
Yeah. From what we've just said, I'm pretty confident that Stallone can do it. It's not. This is in his wheelhouse. This is his passion, you know.
I would assume that Coogler's going to be somewhat involved, like maybe a producing credit or something like that to his name.
Michael B. Jordan was very good in the film, I think.
He was fantastic.
Oh, really?
He's always a good, solid actor, though.
No, okay, cool. Well, I thought that was interesting news. Stu, some stuff here. You're a bit of a Doctor Who fan, aren't you?
I'm a big fan of Doctor
Who. Okay, now, have you heard of... I want to say Shader. Is that how you pronounce it? It's the Missing Douglas Adams story. When Douglas Adams was a script editor on the later seasons of Tom Baker. Obviously, Douglas Adams of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I love Douglas Adams. Now, he was a script editor, and he wrote this Shader story, which they shot part of it, but it was shut down, I believe, by... It was either a writer's strike or some sort of a strike at BBC, and it never got finished. Now, they've used footage of that 70s one... in like the Five Doctors and in various things. Tom Baker, they've done animated versions of it before. They're now doing it as a, recreating it as a BBC full feature, full length animation. So whereas before, I think what they did was they had what they'd shot and they put in like animated sections, quite low budget, to fill in the gaps. But now they're going back and they're doing, from the original scripts, I believe it's going to be Tom Baker voicing it and Lalith Ward, who's Romana, they're doing the whole story.
Yeah.
As I think it's fuck awesome. Like,
that's cool.
Yeah, like, I mean, Tom Baker, sign me up. I wish he would do more stuff. I love Tom Baker so much. And this story is like the famous lost story. And I think its reputation is that maybe its reputation's a bit grown in because it was like the lost one.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But regardless, I mean, dude, Tom Baker down there in the DVDs, I've got the Key to Time series.
Nice.
You know, and yeah, the whole thing. And you've got to come over, so you pull up a chair, you know.
I'm here right now.
Let's go. Just keep going. Shut off the signal. And it's from that period. It's around that time. It's a year either way. Where Douglas Adams, basically, he was blowing up with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on the radio. And on the books, and he was sort of doing that. That was blowing up when he was on Doctor Who. But he introduced some really cool ideas to Doctor Who, as well as that humour that Tom Baker responded so well to.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were just that whole time period for Doctor Who is just golden for me.
That's what set up modern Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's great. Like, Tom Baker was everything. Like,
there was about a 5-year period there which set up all of modern Doctor Who.
Yeah. And, like, honestly, if you go through, like, Tom Baker's resume of Doctor Who, there's some of the most amazing stories.
Yeah.
From really serious to dark to wacky. Like, he covered the gamut. I think it's a shame. I think because he was so famous for the role, he doesn't have to do as much as some of the other guys to puff their stuff up, which they've done. Like, Paul McGann, who only had the one movie, has done a stack of audio. I think Tom Baker's hardly done any. So I think it's really cool that he's coming back with his full BBC feature-length animation.
That's really cool.
I want to see it. I'll watch the whole thing. And I love that Lala Ward is coming back as Romana, you know, to do the voicing and stuff. So they get, like, if, as long as you get the Doctor and his companion with the original voicing, I'm cool. You can fill in the rest of the voice actors. you can't just you, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah, come on.
I mean, but to be honest, I don't think many of the fans would actually recognise Tom Baker's voice.
You reckon?
As much as... Like, his voice has changed.
Oh, he's a lot older now.
He's a lot older.
I'm down for it, though. I don't care. I will recognize it. I am that hardcore of an old fan that I'm 1,000% down for this.
I think all the hardcore fans are going to love this little touch.
Yeah.
But if you're not a hardcore fan, you're still going to enjoy this movie.
Oh, yeah. I think look, Douglas Adams was a genius. He tragically died well before his time. He had a heart attack and just dropped dead on the spot in his early 50s. He was such a gifted writer. He used some of the script for Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. So some of the ideas from... He was one of those guys. I don't think he's one of those guys who had a lot of ideas that I think struggled to convert it into his books. And so he used some of the concepts that he used for Shader into one of his books.
Yeah.
No problems with that. I mean, that's cool. The Dirk Gently novels, is only two are fantastic.
Yeah.
No, I'm 100% down for it. I've always felt it was a real loss to the genre that we lost Douglas Adams so early because he was so talented. And those Hitchhiker Guide to the Galaxy novels, dude, they were just everything to me. Like, I just love them so much. The original ones he wrote, I think there was five of them when he was alive, maybe six. They're just so good. Have you read them?
Yeah, I've read Hitchhikers.
Mm, that's good.
It's a fantastic
book, and dude, they restaurant in the universe. And have you ever seen the old show? It's dated terribly, but
I haven't seen the old show. I saw the remake, the movie that came out horrible. 10 years ago.
Compared to the original, horrible.
Which wasn't great.
No. Dude, dated as hell, but the original show they did, which was with the BBC radio or the radio guys,
yeah,
it's great. It's just, there was just real genius there. You know when you get those rare moments where the genius just rises above the budgets and everything? It was just so funny, so off the wall, and the actors were just so good.
Yeah,
I can't speak highly enough about Douglas Adams. It excites me to hear that this is a reality because I just think it's like Tom Baker's not going to be around forever. It breaks my heart, but the fact that we're going to have him do this and get Romana, I love Romana so much. Lala Ward was just so great as Romana, and to have her in the thing as well, it's just gold, basically.
Yeah,
you know, she was married to Richard Dawkins.
Really?
Yeah, he's married to Richard Dawkins, I think, who passed away, didn't he? She's married to Richard Dawkins for many years. She was married to Tom Baker very briefly, actually.
I knew that, yeah.
Yeah, very, very briefly, I think. But, yeah, no, she married to Richard Dawkins for many years, 20, 30 years. Yeah, until he passed away. Anyway, I've actually got some other Doctor Who news, Stu, about we've obviously got the new Doctor, the female Doctor, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yes,
I am. It's just going to be such a fresh lease of life for this show.
Yeah.
I got this news this morning. They're reporting that Series 11 will only have 10 episodes, each with an hour-long running time, instead of the usual 12 to 13, at 45 minutes a pop. A new sonic screwdriver is also supposedly being designed as we speak. And both the inside and outside of the TARDIS are set for a complete refurb. That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. It's expected, though. Every time we get a new Doctor, the TARDIS gets a makeover. We always get a new sonic screwdriver.
Yep. Although I am interested to hear that they're doing 10 episodes hour long. I like that.
Yeah, that seems to be the trend now. They're heading towards longer episodes.
Are you old-fashioned like me? I still like the original ones where they're 25 minutes four-parters, the 70s and 80s.
I like them, but they always seem too short.
But what I love is, dude, I've got so many of them on DVD, okay? And I get it. It's all on streaming. Dude, these DVDs travel with me wherever I go because you know why? You can just pop me in and go, oh, who am I in the mood for? John Pertwee, just put it in Green Death, 6-8 episodes. They're overly flabby. They're so slow at times, but they're so interesting. You really got an insight into the mindset of what the BBC was like in the 70s and stuff. They had some really creative people working on the program. But I do miss it sometimes, but that said, I really come to love the new Doctor Who's, even though my criticisms, I will appreciate it being an hour long because I think you can do more in the full hour.
It's where TV is trending at the moment,
mm-hmm.
which are shorter seasons, but longer episodes.
I've got no problems with that.
You're able to work in longer, more complicated arcs and give the actors a real chance to shine in these roles.
And let's face it, she's going to have, I mean, I'm 1,000% behind her. She's going to have a point to prove, because there's some sexist assholes out there on the internet, dude,
Yeah, there's a lot of haters out there, but they've been critical every time there's a change.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's a lot of people who are excited, though, as well. I think the Doctor Who fans are actually pretty, honestly, pretty forgiving and love. Yeah. We've learned to embrace, as a Doctor Who fan, many a change.
Exactly. I feel like this unfairly will be scrutinised.
Oh, it will be.
Because it's the first female doctor.
Yeah. But, hey, it's well due. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, it's past due.
This should have happened, like, 20 years ago.
I just feel like she is going to get more reviewers, more people paying attention to anything she does.
Mm.
Fortunately, unfortunately, we don't know yet.
Well, fingers crossed, I hope she's just really good and knocks it out of the park.
Exactly. You know, I'm hoping it's going to be fantastic.
I'm down for it. I'm going to watch
the hell up and move on.
Yep, I'm going to watch every single episode. I'm going to, really get into it. I think Capaldi was good, but I've sort of lost a bit of focus on it. Matt Smith was my...
Yeah, same. Capaldi was a bit of a down note.
Yeah, yeah.
Matt Smith and Tennant as well.
I'm ready for the Christmas special this year. We watch that, she regenerates, or he regenerates into her, and I'm good to go.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, definitely. Stu, I had another piece of news. You're just wrapping up our news for the week. It's been a big week. Elijah Wood, this is annoying, wants to play the Why the Last Man's Yorick. I actually thought this had been announced, but I hate it when we, in news items, like, we want to play. It's like, you're searching for a role, Elijah Wood, obviously. And you're not my first pick for Yorick and
Wyatt. He's trying to generate his own...
fucking buzz. That never works though, dude.
No, it doesn't.
Like, that's the same as, like, that chick who was in... She's really good. I like her, actually. The girl who's in Battlestar Galactica. Starbuck. She wanted to be Captain Marvel and push for it real hard.
And then Marvel was like, not Brie Larson.
Yeah, they're like, that's great,
Yeah.
Dude. I want to play the Doctor. It's not fucking happening. But I also want to be the Doctor. My reality disconnect's pretty bad, so, I want to be the Doctor. Does it actually mean I am the Doctor? Can I travel in the TARDIS? I've got another question for you, Doctor Who's, because there's just so much I love about the show. What's your favourite, the classic TARDIS, the white panels?
Uh-huh.
I always love that design, but I also really love, if you recall, Tom Baker used the second control room, which was kind of more, sort of more fancy. He used it in, like, Mask of Mandrura, I think the name was. Like, used it in one season. They used the second control room the whole time. There was no explanation given. He just switched it up.
Yeah.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, they just randomly went to the other room.
But do you remember how it was, like, so fancy and stuff? I was always like, man, this is the real control room. But I also really liked the original one with just the sort of, like, blank walls with the circles.
Yeah, the classic control room. The portal look, yeah.
Yeah, I dug them heavily. I almost prefer them to sort of the control room now. I know the control room now is supposed to be, how it's kind of more mechanical and stuff, but the old school part of me likes, I would love it if they went back to the second control room, did something like that. Like, just brought, or dude, why, could you do it so you could have the portals?
Yeah.
Why not? You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did something like that.
I mean, if you remember, I can't remember, it happened in a special recently where the TARDIS reverted back to that.
Did it? Okay.
It was like a Christmas special.
Yeah,
or,
vaguely, yeah. Yeah,
it might have been the Three Doctors one.
Okay.
Where we saw Matt Smith, David Tennant.
Oh, yes. Come back again. It was like Day of the Doctor or Time of the Doctor.
Day of the Doctor, yeah. I'm pretty sure.
That was a good episode.
It was brilliant.
Yeah.
But it was something like that, and recently it happened. It reverted for a small time.
Where is the one? I want to watch it. I haven't watched the... there's a special called Adventures in Space and Time, I believe it's called. And it's the story of the
first
Doctor. Yeah,
it's like a documentary of the first
Doctor. Is it good? Have you watched it?
Yeah, I did watch it. I enjoyed it.
And has that guy also done a show with Capaldi? Because I haven't watched it. I'm not up to it.
So the actor, he plays...
He plays the first Doctor, doesn't he?
He plays Hartnell.
Yeah.
He's actually quite a well-known actor. He's in Harry Potter as Filch.
Okay.
He's in Game of Thrones.
Okay.
He's a pretty major actor.
And is he in somewhere in Capaldi's, like, season just gone? Is he in there somewhere as the first Doctor? Like a crossover or something?
Briefly. We see him very, very briefly.
Oh, okay. Because I think that's fascinating. I'm not up to that. Is it a good episode? Because I think
it's the last episode in the season.
I might check it out. Because I've actually got them all to watch. And just haven't got around to
it. It's one
of
those self-discovery episodes where Capaldi ends up in, like, his own timeline kind of thing.
I kind of find that pretty interesting.
And he turns around and there's William Hartnell kind of saying, I'm going to teach you a few things.
I like that.
Like, that's awesome. That's so cool.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid, they had the novelizations. If you've ever seen them, back in the 80s, Target, they had them in the school library.
Yeah.
And at that time, I'd seen... let's say most of Tom Baker's, stuff, but I hadn't seen, because they hadn't shown it, the John Pertwee stuff. But I'd read a lot of like first, second, third documents. So it was like an encyclopedia with it. And then ABC repeated it from the start of John Pertwee. And I was like, oh, yeah. I was a kid in Christmas. And I was, and I remember watching it because I love John Pertwee as well. I think he was.
So at that time, had you seen any of Troughton or had you seen any of Hartnell?
I'd read Stacks, but no, I hadn't seen the originals until I got a bit older and they were out on video. And then I did watch quite a few of them on video, but I was quite a bit older by that point. Like, we're talking like that was kind of more like in the 90s, like 1990. But in the 80s, dude, and I've never been a huge fan of, I find those tough to watch, if I can be honest. But I find John Pertwee, I'll watch the John Pertwee episodes. For me, it's the colour. As soon as they went colour with John Pertwee, I'm down.
Yeah.
You know, and he was.
It's
and
a big change, right?
They went colour with his first episode.
Yeah.
And John Pertwee was a really good Doctor Who.
Oh, he was.
He was great. What I remember is, Stu, that they. So I had, like, my mother bought me, like, the encyclopedia of all the episodes, so I knew what order they were in. This is before the internet, okay? So I knew what order they were in and, like, the storylines.
Yeah.
And so we're watching it on ABC, and I actually taped them all when they came on. I had called it the Who Files. And so I had, like, this videotape collection of it all. This is some pretty geeky stuff, kids.
The beginning of Dave.
I didn't have a girlfriend, guys.
Surprise.
Girlfriends do not talk to Dave at this age. Anyway, so basically, it got to the part where it's the episode called The Three Doctors, where it had William Hartnell, the original guy, still alive, really sick. He's only in it very briefly.
Yeah.
Patrick Thurston, who Patrick I loved.
Troughton, sorry.
I loved him. I thought he was entertaining as hell.
Yeah.
And he comes into it, and obviously John Pertwee. And it's the one where, at the end of that storyline, spoilers, kids, for something that happened God knows when.
40 years ago.
At the end of it, he can materialize the TARDIS again. He can move around the TARDIS. He was trapped on Earth.
Yeah.
And I just remember my excitement waiting for that episode
count. What happened? It was like just budget constraints. They're like,
budget constraints, yeah.
Yeah, we're trapped on Earth now.
We're trapped on Earth with the Brigadier, who was a genius, and Sergeant Benton, and John Pertwee. It was just the dream team. And they were trapped on Earth, and it was just fighting aliens on Earth. And Jesus Christ, it worked.
Yeah.
They really made it work. And they could just reuse the sets all the time because they were always there. And my dad always used to say the smallest army in the world. It was like one. It was like a lorry with about four soldiers and the Brigadier and Sergeant Benton. And anyway, but I remember my excitement waiting for that episode when they were all together. It just blew my mind as a kid. I don't know where this is going, other than to say that I'm a big fan of the classic Doctor Who as well as the original. I had a tough time adjusting to the new Doctor Who. It took me until Tennant. And then I got into it. I struggled initially, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Just because I was so connected. I was happy it was on. You know what I mean? Like, I was happy the franchise was alive, but it wasn't an automatic connect for me. Mostly just because I was so attached to the old stuff, you know? I recognised it had its weaknesses and everything like that.
Sure.
Anyway, Stu, you won't believe it, but that actually wraps up the news, and it's time for Weekly Comics!
Yay.
I mean, yeah, you've got no energy left. Even I'm a bit punch drunk.
I'm looking forward to some of these weekly comics, though.
Good. Okay. Well,
and
you
then
could
trade of the week.
Yeah, trade of the week is going to be good. Ooh. Now, first weekly comics issue was Dark Knight's Metal 3.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, it was good.
Readable, but as far as the Dark Knight series has gone, least favorite so far.
For me, it was the weakest by some distance.
Yeah.
I just really felt like it just dropped off a little bit, like. I don't know what it was, like, because all the elements are there that it should be cool, but I was just a bit like, this story has just lost a lot of momentum.
Yeah, like, it's got all the right characters, it's got all the right setting, and it's just not quite delivering.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, I think part of it's an expectation thing.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed the first two, we enjoyed them so much.
Yeah.
And the tie-in issues have been really good, too.
Exactly.
Like, we read, like, you saw Dawnbreaker, Murder Machine, and mentioned here, their tie-in issues were better than this issue.
The tie-ins were really good.
Yeah. I mean, this often happens in an event. You'll get to the mid part and there's a lull after a start. And look, Snyder is quite guilty at times of really starting strong and ending poorly. I hope this is just a lull, you know?
I hope so. I hope it's going to pick up again. Because it is a really fun series.
The stakes are quite high, too. It really is encircling the whole DC universe, isn't it? Things are really popping off.
The Darkseid's involved, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was... It's worth it. I really hope at the end of Dark Knight's Metal we look back on it as an event that's a really good one. So I hope episode 4 is a lot stronger than this.
Yeah, so do I.
Stu, wanted to get your opinion on Despicable Deadpool 287. This was a cool new darker direction for Deadpool. Jerry Duggan is a firm hand at the wheel. I really, really, really enjoyed this one.
Okay. So did I.
Yeah,
it was a different take on Deadpool. It was less of the wacky humor.
Yeah, much darker. He's going after Cable because of the deal he struck with Strife.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, I'm always a big fan of seeing Deadpool and Cable in the same
film. Oh, me too.
That's a great combo.
Cable-Deadpool, that's where I started, really.
Yeah.
You know? Look, Jerry Duggan, dude, we've got to get him on the show. He's such a good writer for Deadpool, isn't he?
He's fantastic.
He does what I like to see, the flow. He gets how to do funny, manic Deadpool, dark, depressed Deadpool, a very dark version of Deadpool here. He has gone up and down on this character and like an absolute genius. Ever since, dude, it was all new Marvel.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Years ago. He's been on the title for years. He must just love the character. And I was really scared that when they...
And it shows. It shows that he really understands and loves the character.
Yeah, he does. I think he's one of the best writers Marvel have, if I can be 100% honest.
Yeah.
I honestly reckon that he's literally one of the best writers that Marvel have available for them. He's astounding. Now, Stu, did you read The Amazing Spider-Man 789? I had this as an optional title.
Yeah, I didn't get through it.
Yeah, well, you didn't miss a lot. It's all right. You get away from Parker Industries, you're back to Peter Parker down on his luck, he's broke. But it's nothing fantastic, Stu. It's not great stuff.
Yeah.
I gave it 6 out of 10. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so it's good, but yeah. Don't, you know, rush out to grab it.
No, definitely not. Okay, Stu, so looking at... that was Amazing Spider-Man. Okay, nothing great. Looking at a comic that I'm giving a perfect 10 for this week, and that's Batman White Knight 1.
I love this book.
This was great.
I did not expect it to be this good.
I had almost no expectation. I thought this was going to be run-of-the-mill. I thought this was connected to Metal, but it's not. It's just his own thing.
That's what I thought when I read it. I was like, all right, so we've got the Dark Batman and Metal... We're going for a light White Knight kind of protagonist. Okay.
And it's also a continuing series, which I didn't know as well. Our research was really up to scratch, as usual, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely zero, yeah. We just rock up, read them like, oh, I like that.
So the basic pitch, I'll give you the pitch from what I understand. The comic starts off with basically a pretty cool-looking Batmobile. The art's sick in this, by the way.
The art's amazing.
Yeah. The Batmobile rocks up to Arkham Asylum, and out gets a guy who's not Batman. And he gets in there, and they refer to him as Mr. Napier, and lovers of the 88 movie or 89 movie will remember Jack Napier was a Joker. And he goes, Batman, I need you. And Batman is literally just chained up in his costume.
Yeah.
That's the beginning of the story. It then cuts back like a year later or something. And it shows a very reckless Batman in a Batmobile, like literally crushing over buildings, injuring people, chasing the Joker. And it's a reckless Batman, like Batgirl's in the Batmobile with him trying to calm him down, Nightwing's running kind of interference to prevent civilians getting injured too badly. And the Joker just seems like the normal crazy Joker. That's the one thing that's constant in this story at the beginning. The Joker seems like a normal Joker. Batman seems a little more unhinged.
I mean, look, I was sorry to go back. I just couldn't get over the artwork.
It was great. Have we got the artist history?
I don't hear. No.
Okay. I've got it on my iPad. I'll try to bring it up because it really was remarkable art. I don't. You know, our research is really up to scratch. I don't have the artist or the writer. So, apologies to the creative team. But what I will say is, go and buy. Honestly, either in your comic store or on Comixology, go and buy Batman Knight 1. It's really good. I've had a couple of people who were sort of friends of mine on Facebook who aren't necessarily your Wednesday Warriors who are commenting on just how strong this issue is. It's got elements that are quite reminiscent of the Frank Miller, the Talking Heads on TV. It's got a lot going for it. And basically in the story, they wind up in this pill factory and Batman force feeds Joker these pills, like crams it down his throat because he's so mad at him. And Gordon is just like looking on. Someone gets it on a camera phone, which shows basically, you know, I guess you could call it police brutality, or at least brutality by Batman, with the police just watching. And so the subtext on it's due where they, you notice they mention things like SJWs and they mention police brutality, some of the buzzwords of the day.
Yeah, it's a very modern comic.
Yeah, it's a little, is meta the right word, Stu, or refers to like...
Yeah, it's a little meta.
Yeah. Which I don't necessarily think... the artist Sean Murphy, Stu, who is a very good artist. Very good artist indeed. And he... He did the script and the art, Stu. And Matt Hollingsworth did colours. So
nice.
There you go. Sean Murphy's quite well known. I think he did The Wake with Scott Snyder. and he's a very well-known artist, and he's now taking scripting duties. And God, if this is what he's bringing to a script, that's something else, because it's powerful stuff.
Yeah.
No,
it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's an easy 10 out of 10 for me.
You've got two 10 out of 10s, which is rare on a weekly comic. Because when you read a lot of weekly comics, often you just go to the end of 21 pages and you're like, yeah, you know, like, we've moved the story forward an inch. This was like an old-style Frank Miller, you know, a lot of information, a lot was going on. It's some of the best Batman I've read in a long time, frankly. I'd put this up there. This is probably the first Batman since Grant Morrison where I've gone, shit, this is really powerful. And that just tells me that Sean Murphy, not just an artist, this guy's got serious scripting chops as well. Now, that wraps up Weekly Comics for the week, Stu, and we turn to our trade of the week.
Our trade of the week.
World War Hulk, man.
World War Hulk. Now, this follows on directly from Planet Hulk.
From the Planet Hulk opus, where Hulk was on the planet Scar.
Sakaar.
Still can't get it right. And at the end of Planet Hulk, he was journeying back to Earth. Warbound.
Surfing on that the spaceship.
Yeah.
With the Warbound inside.
And now this story, it was a 5-issue one, which was a nice break for Stuart and me because we just done the 12-issue slog of Crisis last week.
No.
Which is just
this was a nice, easy read. This was very quick.
It was quick.
It's around 200 pages, but it was a quick 200 pages.
Yeah, it flew by. Stuart read it all in one day. I started reading it on the train.
It was 2 days. Yeah.
John Romita Jr. on art. I mean, I love John Romita Jr. You know, like, there's just something about the guy's art that just gets me every time. Same writer, Greg Pak, who knows he's Hulk, but he also knows a lot of the other side characters of the Marvel Universe.
And this is where we get to really see what Greg Pak can do with an ensemble cast.
Yep. Because, basically, storyline is Hulk lands in New York and just declares war on the Illuminati.
Well, he lands on the moon.
That's right. He annihilates...
He lands on the moon right outside Black Bolt and Medusa's Blue Zone.
Mm-hmm.
So they come out and they're basically... Medusa just says, you don't want to pick a fight here.
Yeah.
You know, Black Bolt's beaten you once before. You don't want to step up to this challenge again.
Yeah.
And Hulk just lays down the gauntlet.
But Hulk this time is a different Hulk.
Hulk this time is completely different.
He's really pissed.
The angrier Hulk gets, the stronger he gets, and he has never been this angry.
And that's such a cliche, but I finally get it. If you know what I mean? Like, I've heard that all my life.
Yeah.
The angrier Hulk gets... Like, it's just a
angrier
common...
he gets, the stronger he gets. And you're like, okay, I get that.
But I get that. And I'm always like, how angry, how strong in my mind? Well, this comic kind of answers that question.
Yeah, it does.
The Illuminati, powerful though they individually all are, and I like the way Greg Pak doesn't position them as heroes. They are the villains, really, in this story.
Yeah, he positions this so you don't really end up with a clear-cut hero-villain.
No.
Because at no point do you look at this guy and go, that's the villain.
No. Hulk is definitely the aggressor, so he doesn't get a total sympathy because he's so aggressive. But by the same token, they definitely, much as though they may whine that they didn't cause the bomb to go off, they did exile him and they did cause the problems to him. And I like the way Hulk goes after each one, and each one to their own, you know, level puts up a very decent fight.
But I loved how it's set up. Hulk and Black Bolt go head to head.
Yeah.
Like Black Bolt
just bang
yells.
Yeah.
It blows off a chunk of the moon.
Yeah.
Like it's a powerful ass attack.
Which Tony later said is when he realized they really had a problem in their hands.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But at that point, Hulk sends a hologram down to Earth holding up this like broken body of Black Bolt.
Just beaten Black Bolt.
And says, I'm coming to New York for the Illuminati.
Mm.
I'm calling you guys out, but if you're in New York, you've got 24 hours to get out of town.
To evacuate. And most people do.
Yeah, but it's like the Hulk's clearly not there to cause damage.
No. That's how they got away with it a little bit of the story.
Yeah, and he says, you know, if you're in New York, get out. I don't want to hurt you.
Mm.
I'm after these guys.
Yep. And he plays the video, doesn't he?
And he shows them the video of these guys sending him away in a rocket ship and saying, we're your friends, we want to help you. And then he says that rocket ship exploded.
Yep. And he got stranded
on
Killed
a million people, including my pregnant wife.
Yep, that's exactly right. And, I mean, what I particularly loved is, like, some of the fights. Like, Doctor Strange is certainly probably the more heroic of the Illuminati.
That was a very cool fight.
It was a very good fight.
I mean, Tony Stark steps up early.
Yes.
He throws on the Hulkbuster armor and he flies in head first.
Yeah, but you knew Tony wasn't going to be able to. It's just the Hulkbuster armor and we had 4 issues to go get Tony.
It always felt like a delay tactic, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because the first thing we see is them all going to Robert Reynolds' house.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, Sentry, we need you. You're the big guy now.
Certainly not my favourite character of all time, but he's well used well here.
He's used very well.
Because he's the ultimate big gun.
Exactly right. Mm. And they do a couple of times mention the order of these guys in terms of power level. And they've said, Black Bolt was always considered number two.
Yeah.
And now the Hulk's just beating him senseless.
Yeah, I was kind of like oh, okay, out of all the Illuminati, in terms of raw power, Black Bolt's about as powerful as you get.
Yeah, in terms of Illuminati, Black Bolt is as powerful.
Charles
as
Xavier was clearly dead, because otherwise they didn't have a one with him.
That's true.
Must have been dead in the comics by that point.
Yeah, he was dead in the comics by that point.
So not that long before, though.
No, I mean, this was during the Superhero Registration Act.
Yeah, so is
you did notice there was one point where Tony says, anyone that's willing to fight for us, I'll pardon them.
That was my question. Is this before Spider-Man had fully gone underground against them? Because he fought with Tony and everything. So was this before Spider-Man? Like, I was trying to get my timeline in my head.
Yeah.
So Cap's dead, okay?
Yeah.
But Spider-Man hadn't yet fully gone over to the side of the New Avengers. He was still on Tony's side, was he?
He wasn't on Tony's side. He was still separate to Tony.
Okay.
But he wasn't underground as yet.
Okay, right. That was interesting. It was an interesting time period, and it clearly showed that during the Civil War, they got Hulk off the board a bit by sending him to Sakaar.
That's exactly right.
Which was clever. It was very clever by Marvel. This was obviously a very...
And by the way, this ties in perfectly with the MCU.
Yeah.
Like, this just works out. No. Like, during Civil War, there's no Hulk. Why is there no Hulk during Civil War?
Yeah, well...
And you realise that he's off-planet. He's doing his thing.
It's good that the Marvel comics were clever, and Marvel films can be just as clever.
Yeah,
you know? And they certainly have got the brains by themselves anyway. No, I really... For someone who loves the Marvel U, like I do...
Yeah.
And I love the Hulk, but I'm not a big... As I've said before, I'm not a big solo Hulk reader. I never have been. This was really enjoyable. He came back. He fought everyone. A lot of guys put up a good fight. Like, plenty of guys in this aren't the Illuminati, so they're not technically bad guys. You kind of root for them more.
Yeah.
The Warbound are funny as well. It really was one of those comics that was a page-turner. I kind of knew how it was going to have to end. You know, like, you know how it's going to have to end. Somehow it's going to get resolved. But how you got there was really inventive.
Yeah, it was.
I would give Doctor Strange points for putting up the best fight. I thought he really...
Doctor Strange was an amazing fight.
He got over two issues with his fight, which I don't think anyone else did.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. He had two solutions up his sleeve. He's like, all right, let's try number one. When that failed miserably, he's like, all right, I hate option two, but I'm going to go with option two.
They just underestimated how angry the Hulk was. Like, really. At the end of the day... I don't really think there was anything they could do. It was kind of the point of the story. This was an immovable force.
Yeah, exactly.
The only out they had was Sentry. And Sentry, as I said, was an agoraphobic schizophrenic who sort of didn't know what he was doing.
Which was always the Marvel way. It's you give someone extreme power and then you give them weakness.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've made the most powerful guy in the Marvel universe. Mm. Well, as far as humans go.
Sure.
The most powerful guy in the Marvel universe has one of the most crippling, debilitating diseases.
Yeah, he can barely get out of the house.
And mental illness as well. He can barely get out of the house. He doesn't understand himself.
You know, he was an invented character around that time, and they rewrote him back into the history.
Mm.
That was interesting.
They retconned him right back.
Yeah, that was an interesting technique. A lot of fans hate it, but I always thought it was at least an interesting concept to do that. Like, and I think there's something about how everyone had forgotten him and then sort of remembered him again.
Yeah, and this was kind of a good reawakening for that character with this story arc.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you got to show off what he can do, what he's capable of. Because, the other characters, they treat him like a god.
Yeah, they're literally... Like, the president goes in the end to his house.
Yeah.
To talk him out.
Yeah, exactly.
And Tony anticipated this, which I liked.
Yeah.
Tony anticipated exactly what was going to happen, that Hulk would beat them all. He says, it was in the story, because Black Bolt blew out a huge chunk of the moon. He used his full power.
Yeah.
And it wasn't enough. And
I just loved, the initial confrontation between those two.
Mm.
Black Bolt basically just whispers enough.
Yeah.
Blows the Hulk back about 100 metres into this crater.
Yeah.
And Hulk stands up and goes, I didn't come here to hear you whisper.
And I was like, okay.
And just charges back in. You're like, oh, this is good.
Well, something I felt sorry for, when you read it first time, because I didn't anticipate the twist. The twist about the bomb, it was genuinely surprising.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming when I first
read it. It made sense of that arc, of that character. I was kind of sad
it did
about
because
the
Warbound. It kind of validates what the Illuminati did.
Yeah.
In that they did have good intentions the whole way through.
Yeah. Well, they never intended. And curiously enough, from reading the story of Planet Hulk, I didn't get the impression that it was the Illuminati who purposely blew the bomb up. I always thought that was an accident. Hulk took that impression.
Hulk took it as, you sent me here on a ship that could blow up.
Yeah, okay.
But, yeah, and there is there's a brilliant twist at the end.
They're still somewhat culpable anyway. Like, that's the thing. The Illuminati are definitely not innocent in this book at all. They are, in a sense, the villains of the story from Hulk's perspective, definitely.
Yeah.
Because they did send him away on a ship which did blow up. There's still some culpability there. They didn't, you know, do it correctly. Reed had this great idea that he'd go to this world where there was no life or whatever.
No intelligent life. There's plenty of game and forests.
Yeah.
But Hulk could be alone, which he's always wanted.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it didn't work out that way because the wormhole opened up and took him to Sakaar.
I was anticipating Silver Surfer coming back, but he didn't. I always kept thinking Silver Surfer was going to make a reappearance, maybe to come Hulk.
It did feel like a Silver Surfer reappearance was coming.
Yeah, I thought he might have been
one. Heroes had the control discs implanted in them, and you're like, last time the only way to get rid of them was Silver Surfer.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing, I felt bad for the Warbound at the end. I didn't feel they deserved to be locked up. I thought, if we're going to lock the Warbound up, why aren't we locking up the Illuminati? Like, what did the Warbound do that was so bad?
I think because from the perspective of, like, the Earth's government,
yeah,
the Illuminati sent Hulk away after Hulk had destroyed Harlem.
Right.
So the government was like, yeah, good move, Illuminati. And then all of a sudden, the Hulk comes back with a bunch of other warriors.
Sure.
Who all fight against Earth's heroes.
But they also fought, like, but the Rock guy was kind of helpful.
He was in the end, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the ending where both teams realised that there was a common goal here.
Yeah.
And it was to save people.
I just found that's where it's like, always we have to get, like, the status quo. I could have lived without seeing the Warbound in chains, basically. That was a bit depressing for me. But I'm often like that, so that's just me.
Yes and no. I mean, yeah. I liked the way it was towards the end where the Thing was talking to Korg, the two big rock guys.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
And they were kind of working together.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of positives to take from this.
Oh, sure.
And they did get back to a status quo somewhat. With the Hulk being locked up.
Hulk was locked up, which obviously doesn't last long either, but
no, it never lasts.
But that's cool. That's to be expected. Look, it's a really strong... I feel like I've been recommending comics all day long on the show. This is a really strong comic. It's really strong.
It's a fantastic ending to Planet Hulk.
You owe it to yourself to read Planet Hulk first, and then this comes as a bit of a cleanser. It's a different experience, but it's very much connected. This pays a lot of it off. Like, a lot of the stuff that he built in Planet Hulk over a long period of time then pays off and resolves in World War Hulk, but you need to read the first part, I think, to get the full flavour.
Yeah, you absolutely do need to read Planet Hulk first.
Yeah.
Although they do give you flashbacks to Hulk and Kiera.
Yeah.
And how that bomb...
But you won't... It's the classic one.
You certainly don't get the full impact.
Yeah, you won't get the emotional thing. Like, as a Planet Hulk reader, I really bought into his relationship with his wife, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, with him and Kiera. Yeah, because you actually got to watch that bond grow and then...
Exactly. It's quite devastating, really. Now, I got to say, I've never really read Hulk before. I've read Hulk issues here and there, Stu, and little runs, like Future Imperfect was very good for Peter David. But this was one where I was like, well, this is one of my favourite Marvel stories. This is up there in the top 20 now. I really enjoyed it. I would recommend this to anyone. If someone said to me, man, I'm a huge Hulk fan, where should I go? I'd go Planet Hulk and World War Hulk. Because I think it gives you one flavour of him solo, and the second flavour is him in the Marvel Universe.
Exactly.
And you get both. And
you get but it's there's no admission to entry. You don't need to read a bunch of Hulk before you can walk in. You can walk in completely unaware of Marvel Universe.
And that isn't Hulk's... Well, that's one of Hulk's strengths. He's so simple in concept.
Exactly.
That it's actually, really, yeah. You know, it's an easy entry. I've always found that about Hulk. That's one good thing about him, actually. I've always felt he'd be one of the more challenging characters to write week after week after week after week.
Yeah, and there haven't been many people that have done it well.
No. I mean, show favourite Peter David is the only other guy who, I mean, outside of Stan, you know, Peter David was synonymous with Hulk, but I prefer this Hulk. This Greg Pak Hulk was... Greg Pak's obviously got the chops, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Look, for me, with this book, the only downside for me, and it's barely a downside...
Sure.
...was that coming out of Planet Hulk,
mm-hmm.
where we had a few artists attached to it...
Right.
Gary Frank, Aaron Lepresti... Takeshi Miyazawa and Kylo Paglian.
Oh, good on the names over there, Stu. Jeez, just rolls off the tongue.
Those guys' artwork, I really connected with.
Oh, Planet Hulk, yeah, it was quite special, actually.
I really loved the Planet Hulk artwork.
Mm.
And then going into Brian Michael Bendis' stuff,
mm-hmm.
while I'm a big fan of his artwork...
Oh, John Romita Jr., you mean?
John Romita Jr., sorry.
You love John Romita, though, don't you?
I do love John Romita Jr.'s artwork.
And he's at his usual technique here.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
But for me, I kind of would have liked to see those guys carry it through and finish the story arc.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Switching to his style of artwork, for me, it lost a little bit.
They had a very distinctive style in Planet Hulk. Very distinctive.
They did.
John Romita Jr. always gives you John Romita Jr. He's one of the rare artists in comics.
Oh, take a page and you know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, and he did a good job here. I hear your point, though. You would have liked to see the whole story wrapped up with the same visual style.
Yeah, because I enjoyed the way that... The Hulk was represented with those arts.
No, yeah, definitely.
So that's a very minor downside for me.
That's fair enough. That's an observation.
It's nitpicking, but it's something that I feel you lost a little bit in continuity.
I'd almost think for you, Stu, that you one of those omnibuses, you know, those kind of things. Like you should almost get like the Planet Hulk omnibus or whatever. Like, because I think with World War Hulk as well, the omnibus has a lot of side issues where he fought all those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be interesting. And I am interested in that. Yeah, because I think that would
I have hardcover copies of Planet Hulk and World War Hulk.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah, but I don't have all the extra.
You're a baller over there. You're already a player.
I love this stuff.
Do those hardcover copies have the side issues as well?
No, they don't. Okay. So I am looking at getting something else.
Yeah. You know, why not? Sure, I mean, I'm getting statues over here.
Yeah.
My girlfriend's buying Mercedes. I mean, Jesus, I don't know where this money's coming from. You know, like, obviously a lot richer than I know, Stu.
Hit up Dave for a loan. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Don't forget I work in commercial debt collection as well.
Yeah, exactly right.
I'm a dangerous man.
Yeah, you don't want to take a loan from Dave.
the loan shark and debt collector. It's cutthroat. But
it's treating you well, though. Getting Mercedes and statues.
Oh, God, yeah, well. Look, all I can say is this has been an epic episode of Signal. We've really tried to give the listeners what they wanted. A lot of people corresponded with me about how they responded to the Crisis episode. They enjoyed it, and they enjoyed our views. And I got a lot of feedback and interaction just from the Hulk stuff. Hulk is very popular, man. I got a lot of feedback on our Facebook posts and stuff.
Yeah, and especially these two books.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, it's gold. This is Hulk at his best.
No, and Amadeus Cho to be seen.
Zero Amadeus Cho.
And I read, can I just say this tagline? When I read Despicable Deadpool, I tried the new Avengers, like Avengers 600 and whatever, you know, like just to see.
Yeah.
Amadeus Cho is just unbearable. Like, you know where your mind up is going? You're going, why isn't the Hulk and Amadeus Cho just Amadeus Cho? Because he's exactly the same as normal Amadeus Cho, dude. He just sits... It's so stupid. He sits there, and he's just spouting off scientific bullshit, and you're like, I didn't turn up for this for the Hulk comic. Like, who wants this? And he looks slightly different, just that enough that it's annoying.
Yeah, and now you've got this problem that now you've read the best of the Hulk.
Mm.
Anywhere's down from here, and especially when Amadeus Cho's in there.
No, I would say to listeners, if they like Hulk, read this, and Peter David definitely had some good Hulk. Really good Hulk in the 80s and 90s. Like,
oh, yeah, but this just... Amadeus Cho now just feels so much worse than he did a week ago.
Fucking steer away from Amadeus Cho. Like,
3 weeks ago, we hated Amadeus Cho, but right now, he feels so much worse.
Amadeus Chump. been building up to that joke for a while. Yeah, hopefully he's fucking retconned out of existence in Marvel Legacy. You know?
I hope so.
Like, please.
Send him back to the nerdy Asian guy who was just the brainy sidekick to Hulk.
Let him be that. Like, dude, it's all about, like, oh, he's making jokes again about how he's the 12th, smartest person in the world. Like, I don't care. I really don't care. Where's Bruce Banner? Where's Hulk?
Exactly. I could tolerate him when there was an actual Hulk.
Dude,
and he was,
I'm not even the biggest Bruce Banner fan. I like Hulk. But Bruce Banner for a second, like in these stories, is fine.
Yeah, but when you get brief glimpses of Bruce...
Yeah, that's fine. That's more than fuck enough.
It's brilliant. You can use him to show the vulnerability of Hulk. Fantastic.
I tell you a good version of Hulk. It was when I was reading comics like late 80s, getting into comics heavily. They had the Grey Hulk, Mr. Fix-It, Joe Fix-It.
Working in Vegas as the bouncer.
Yes. And, he did a crossover with Wolverine in the early Wolverine ongoing series. And for a guy like me who was just getting into comics, it was gold. I liked that Hulk. And back then, I think he was Hulk Knight only or something. Like,
yeah, they've gone through a few changes in how the Hulk transforms.
It was just interesting, you know, and he was less powerful than the Green Hulk. And
so they went back and retconned how it changes. Okay. And there's actually a bunch of different Hulks.
Oh.
All inside Bruce Banner's head.
Oh, I got it. Okay, well, that makes sense.
It's kind of like a split personality thing.
Yeah, well, it's kind of connected to that,
and
isn't it?
And when he channels, like, the Green Hulk, there is a Rage Hulk, and there is a...
Yeah.
There's a smart Green Hulk, and there's a couple of Grey Hulks in there, and...
That's cool. No, it's cool. I like the different versions of Hulk. I definitely would say that to readers. Check out this Greg Pak stuff. If you really like more Hulk, I would suggest go to Peter David. Like, he had a long established run. There's one called Future Imperfect, which is set in a future Marvel universe where Hulk's like the leader or something. And it's very good.
Yeah.
Very, very good. And it's in like a three-parter. They related to the sequel too, and it's a very good comic, and this comes from someone who was not a Hulk fan at all. So check it out. Now, turning to next week, Stu, we are doing Batman vs. Predator Volume 1, am I right?
Yeah, so Batman vs. Predator, there's a big three-issue trade that just got released.
Just got released recently from Dark Horse DC.
Yeah, so we're going to review the first issue inside that trade. There's only three issues total.
Cool.
So we're going to give that first one a go. It looks really cool.
Yeah, no, it will be good. I believe Dave Gibbons is on art there from Watchmen fame.
Gibbons, Kubert, Andy and Adam.
Oh, okay, shoot, the Kuberts are on art and Dave Gibbons is writing. There you go.
Dave Gibbons is writing.
Interesting stuff. Now, so that'll be next week. We will do Predator Batman 2 and 3 at a later date.
Yeah.
I know Chuck wrote one of them at least.
And the following week we've got Thor Ragnarok timed perfectly for the release of Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, and Stu, do you know what Thor Ragnarok that we're going to do? Because I'll probably start reading that this week after I finish redoing Batman Predator. Is it 60s or is it like 90s JMS run? Like, can you clue me in on what we're doing?
I mean, there have been two Thor Ragnarok runs. I've got both.
Okay, so which one are we doing?
I'm open. I don't mind. I quite enjoy the original run.
Let's do the original then. Now let's do the original. That's cool with me.
It's harder to read.
Okay, but can you give me the issue numbers or whatever, because I'll put it on the Facebook.
Absolutely.
So and I've got Marvel Unlimited, so I'm sure I've got it all. Let's do that. Let's do the original, because I'd like to do the original.
Yeah.
So we'll do the. So next week we're doing Batman versus Predator, just the first volume, and then the week after that we're doing Thor Ragnarok, the original 60s one, to tie in with the Thor Ragnarok movie that's coming.
Which will be released in Australia 2 days prior to our recording, so we'll be on the ball.
And that means as well that Dave gets to do like a spoiler review, non-spoiler review, things that always confuse me.
Yep, so look Dave forward gets to, that. To do his video editing again.
You look forward to me being very confused. Now, as always, look, check us out on the Facebook page. I think we're really getting up there in numbers now. Signal of Doom at Facebook. My Twitter at RedLantern2051. You should all have copies of Des Moines Soul Fighter by now. And I'll be running a test later on. I'm kidding. But no, seriously, check that out. I'm working on behind my desk, the new Des Moines series now.
Fantastic.
Working on some pitch packages and stuff. So it's all happening. Stu, anything happening over there?
Look, just jump on Facebook, Twitter, Signal of Doom. Let us know what you liked.
Hopefully I don't choke death by next week. If so, there'll be a new co-host in the chair.
Yeah, if you want to be the new co-host, let me know. We'll,
send in your audition tapes this year.
I'll talk to Michelle. We can arrange Dave to
just a full replacement. Yeah, great. Just in time for me to get my Wolverine statue. Some bastard will get his hands on it.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot of exciting things.
I'm looking forward to reviewing the Thor Ragnarok movie with the new co-host.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
All right, thank you very much for listening. We love you all. Good night. Bye.
my country, my back to the sea, looking east. Where the search for the truth is conducted with a wink and a nod, and where power and position are equated with the grace of God. These times of famine for the soul are from the senses of the beast. From the edge of my country, as far as you see, looking east. Hunger in the midnight, hunger at the stroke of noon. Hunger in the mansion, hunger in the rented room. Laughing in the rage, in the absence of light, and the deepening night, where I wait for the sun, looking east. Deepening night, where I wait.